Welcome to episode 131 of the Linux Slugcast. We are an open podcast / lug that meets at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, even though now it's 11:45 or 10:45 on the East Coast. We've been talking this whole time, just now starting the show, every first and third Friday of the month using Mumble. We encourage anyone listening to join us and participate on the podcast. Check out www.linuxlugcast.com for the server details. If you have any questions, comments, or topic you would like us to discuss, and are unable to join us during the live show, you can send us email at feedback@linuxlugcast.com or check out our MeWe community at MeWe.com/join/linuxlugcast or check us out on IRC on the Freenode server #linuxlugcast, which we always monitor during the show. So if somebody listening wants to throw in a comment there, we'll see it. Okay, we have feedback from MeWe, and our frequent contributor Brian Matthews, and four ways to safely reboot, and it's in the show notes. I guess it's from AndromedaComputer.net. So let's see, I haven't opened that yet to look at it. I click on open, but it doesn't go to it. Too many tabs open, just a second. Okay, here I am on the page. Okay, first one is just to use the shutdown button in whatever GUI you have. And a lot of telling you where to find it in different desktops. Does talk about, you wouldn't think about pushing the actual power button on the computer. And rather than just shutting down, your Linux desktop may give you a power menu with options to shut down or reboot. And that feature is configured in the advanced configuration and power interface subsystem. So it may be something, let's see. Okay, well, a lot of us are familiar with setting, in later versions of Windows, you can go in and, configure what happens when you hit the power button, rather than just straight shutting down the computer. This article talks about on GNOME where to go in and configure that. Also KDE. Okay, sorry about that. My wireless headset has like a time thing. I've mentioned before that starts to shut down, and I've got to find the power button and turn it back on. And I guess I bobbled it, and I had it, said, hit the power button and told it not to shut down, and then bobbled it, and then it shut down. And I'm back, so you guys can hear me, right?
Yeah, you sound fine.
I hear you.
Okay, just want to make sure. I didn't want to sit here talking for the next 15 minutes with nothing going out until I figured it out. Okay, so it does tell you how to configure KDE and GNOME to do something different than just shutting, to give you options when you hit the power button on your computer. Doesn't talk about other desktops. Then the systemctl command. And then finally the shutdown, which, that's what I usually do if I shut down from the command line. And you know, so it's you need it's a, you need it elevated, so it's pseudo space shut down, and then space dash R if you want to reboot, and then space now because of course Unix was originally written as a multi-user system, so the default is to say, okay, you know, some give it some time interval, like 5 or 10 minutes, and then, you know, if it's all your terminals connected to your Unix system would come up and say, hey, we're set for shutdown in 5 minutes or 10 minutes or whatever, you know, save what you're working on. Because you're going to lose it if you don't. And of course, with a single user system, that's not really necessary. So if you do shut down now, that's going to not take time. You know, it's not going to send out some kind of message to the other users who aren't there and going to start shutting down. Something I didn't know, shut down space dash capital P space now is to power down immediately. So I guess it doesn't go through all the checks and stuff. And you know, I mean, that sounds like it's pretty much like pulling the power plug.
Hey, I'm back.
And it talks about there's the power off command. And I guess that's not, doesn't look like it's sudo. And, well, I guess you can modify the shutdown command with a number of minutes. I've never had a use for that, but, you know, if you do shutdown space dash R space 10, it would reboot 10 minutes after it's shut down. And these aren't, you know, there are multiple ways from the command line to shut down. It talks sudo reboot, which is, you know, which says it's a shortcut to shut down dash R now. So it's less typing. So I'm glad I read the article. I'll probably do that in the future. And also, well, so five ways, but yeah. Using the init levels, sudo space telinit space zero will shut down, and a reboot sudo space telinit space six will do a reboot. And it goes on to less safe ways to shut down your system by brute force. So, you know, if anybody's interested in the rest of this, it looks like a really good article. So I would refer you to go, you know, to the link in the show notes. Okay, Danny. Oh shoot, I never introduced the host. I'm sorry. I am 5150, your host for this evening. With me is Honky Magoo.
Evening.
And Joe.
Hello, hello.
And Minix.
Hello.
And always last but never least, Netminer.
Yes, indeed.
Okay. Let's see. Danny Meek stepped a fitness tractor recently, but wasn't too crazy about the data being farmed by the manufacturer's app. And after some searching, I discovered GadgetBridge, an open source alternative that's compatible with a lot of different devices. And there's a GitHub link.
I'll let Minix tell you about it.
Yeah, please.
Yeah, so I got a Mi Band 4 made by Xiaomi. I guess that's how you say it. And the Mi Fit app is what you connect to the device with on your phone. But a few things that I'm not too crazy about. For one thing, like a lot of companies, they'll lose money on the hardware to make money on the data, you know, which essentially why the device is so cheap. I think I picked this up for under $40, like $35. I mean, it's comparable to at least a $100 device. And so I knew something, they had to make up that money somewhere. And it's basically through the app. They, you know, collect all your data. Not only that, but also the app itself shows ads, which is weird to me. For a fitness tracking app, it's actually comes with the hardware that you bought to have ads in it. So I was hesitant about using the app itself, and I found this Gadget Bridge, which is it's a fitness tracking app for your phone, but it's open source. And Honky, I think, has used it for his Pebble. Is that right?
Yep. I'd had some issues with my Pebble a while back, and one of the things I tried to do to fix it was I downloaded Gadget Bridge for it and was connecting to it with through that. I think my problems with Pebble was more of a user error. I think after a while of me using it, and you know, it with any watch, it's getting smacked into so many things, it just was stopped working right. So, but yeah, I mean, I thought it was pretty good. I mean, it worked. It did what it was supposed to do.
Yeah. The main thing I wanted to track was my sleeping habits. I've been especially curious about how well I sleep at night. Sometimes I wake up tired and I think I've slept enough. And sometimes I wake up, you know, feeling good. I only slept, you know, what I thought was a few hours. So that's what the main reason I bought it. And so that's what led me to this Gadget Bridge software. But there's a problem that I didn't know. And that is that I have the Mi Band 4. And so the Mi Band 1, 2, and 3 are compatible with Gadget Bridge. The Mi Band 4, there's an issue where it utilizes a key from Xiaomi's server to connect to the Mi Band itself. Or before, it was just a standard Bluetooth connection between the Mi Band and the Mi Fit app. And then the Mi Fit app would connect to the Xiaomi server. But now there's a special key that server side that connects the Mi Band itself to the Mi Band app. So currently I can't use Gadget Bridge with this device until there's a way that you can. I was looking at the GitHub channel, and there's a way to somehow get that key. It also depends on the unique key ID of your Android device as well. So right now I can connect, and I can like test it. I can press buttons within Gadget Bridge to test the vibration sensors on the band, but that's about it. I can't get the data from the band itself without that key. So if you're looking to use Gadget Bridge now with the Mi Band 4, it's still under development, and I'll just have to wait until they figure out a way around that. But it works with a lot of other devices currently, like all the other Mi Bands, and like Honky said, with a Pebble and the Fitbits and all that stuff. Like when I read the comments on the GitHub page, it says they've got it to connect successfully to several Mi Band 4 devices. But they said the only difficulty, you must bring your unique key. And there are several ways with and without rooted smartphones to obtain it. But I don't know how to obtain it or exactly what key they're talking about, if it's something to do with the Bluetooth or what. I don't know. And I don't know how that would be relevant if it depends on a key that's sent server-side by Xiaomi. So I'll just have to keep watching the thread and see what they come up with.
It sounds kind of like Rockbox. You get a music player and you're looking, no, it's not supported.
Yeah, I'll put that thread in the chat, and maybe you can have a look at it and and see what you think they mean.
And Gacha Bridge is available on F-Droid, too.
Yeah, that's where I originally got it. It looks like, but to do it the way they say, where you bring your unique key, you're just going to have to build it yourself with the source.
Scary part of all this, you know, with the stock app, you know, how are they monetizing getting your information? And the only way I can see is they're, you know, they're farming it out to your insurance company.
Yeah, there's no telling what they're doing with your data, because it's a lot of personal data, you know, basically where you move throughout the day, and your sleeping habits, and whether you're moving at all, how many steps you're getting is pretty personal. So, yeah, who knows?
Do you sign into anything to when you, like, the Xiaomi app, did you have to sign into anything?
You just sign in to Xiaomi itself. I think there's an option to use Facebook or Google to sign in, which I didn't. I just used a spare email I had.
I'm just saying, there's some, like, the original Pebble application, there was, you had to do a sign-in. But I've had others where, I mean, let's see, this crappy one that I have, it didn't require any sort of a sign-in at all. I just basically installed the app and then connected. And then the other one was a Google Wear device, and that one I'm sure I had to connect it to my Google account at some point. But there's some that some of the cheaper ones, I don't think you necessarily need to sign into something.
Yeah, probably not. I also looked at the Samsung one, but, you know, it's very similar to the Mi Band, but it's $100, and I didn't want to pay that much for. I wasn't really looking for, like, a smartwatch to begin with, and the Samsung one is not really a smartwatch either. It's a fitness tracker, but it wasn't that important to me that I would pay over, say, maybe $50 for it. So under 40 was a pretty sweet spot.
See, I was completely against the idea of wearables for a long, long time, and then I all of a sudden got, like, this little itch, and, like, I bought a Pebble 2, and that was the wrong thing to do, because now I'm hooked, because with Pebble was fantastic because it was a Paperwhite screen that was always on. I didn't care about any apps for it. I mean, one of the big reasons that the things that sold me on it was the fact that the back end to write apps for it was all open. So I could have sat down and written an app for it pretty easily and been able to send it up to their marketplace. Everything was I believe the whole back end of it was open source, and that's how they were able to copy it over afterwards and make the Rebel store, since the old Pebble servers are all gone now because they're bought out by Fitbit. But having the ability so the screen was on all the time, getting my notifications, and one of the biggest selling points for me was being able to, with just a few clicks on my watch, do a quick reply to a text message. Because, so anytime I'm at work, I don't have to pull my, I get a text message, I don't have to pull my phone out of my pocket. I can just look at my watch, and it's usually something from, like, my wife. And usually it would really make my wife happy if I at least texted something back, like, okay. And I'm able to do that right there on the watch, just real quick, you know, hit, scroll down from, some preset responses and hit like okay or good, or, you know, even if it's just like the emoji thumbs up, and, you know, I'm all set. It's not something where I forget to respond later, and, you know, I get the angry response of, you haven't responded back to me in a while. But I liked having that functionality. I mean, like, I have no desire for, like, a heart rate monitor. I have no desire for any of the fitness stuff, the GPS. Like, I really don't want a fitness tracker. I just want something that I can, like, I like the ability to control my music because I'm on, like, if I'm driving around, my media player is pretty much my phone. And if I can just kind of put my finger down and, you know, pause it or whatever, right from my watch, as opposed to having to open the phone up, you know, and have it on my lap or something like that while I'm driving, or even like scroll between different songs and stuff straight on my watch, that's a hell of a lot easier. And, you know, there's a lot that they seem to push with these fitness trackers that I don't need. And I'm having a real hard time finding something that meets what I need.
Now, for those fitness trackers, will they control like any application, or do you have to use specific applications to get the pause, play, forward functionality?
I think that those are just like, I don't think there's a specific applications you have to use for that, because I've used several different ones.
Yeah, because back in the day, if you had like one of the Samsung Gear Watch, I think it was the 1 and the 2. You had to be using the Samsung-specific player for it to work with it?
Pebble wasn't that way because I used several different things between... Well, I used VLC and I use AntennaPod. And both of those applications, I was able to just be able to pause or, you know, stop, play, change volume and whatnot.
Yeah, see, I'm kind of the opposite. I don't really use it for notifications or to control applications. And I wasn't looking. It seems like you were really looking for the smartwatch functions, and I just wanted to see mainly like statistics, especially when I'm mountain biking and stuff like that, and when I'm sleeping. So I think we have a couple of different use case scenarios.
Well, generally, aren't the fitness tracker watches significantly less expensive than the intentional smartwatch?
Yeah, but they a lot of them seem to all have the same functionality, but they, you know, like you can buy like a pretty decent looking fitness tracker that'll give you your notifications and let you control audio and stuff like that. My biggest thing is I want to find something like the Amazfit Bip, which you can also use with Gadget Bridge. One of the big reasons why I found it was there was a point when I was like, all right, I'm basically just going to start buying stuff that is on the list of Gadget Bridge that'll actually work with it. But the Amazfit Bip is one of those things that's a very like Pebble-esque, where it's it has GPS, it has I don't remember whether it has a heart rate monitor or not, but it, you know, it has a lot of the fitness stuff, and at the same time, it's it has the screen on all the time. But a lot of the regular fitness trackers have all that functionality. Minus the ability to respond. Actually, there's very few that have the ability to respond to like text messages and stuff. I think it's just text messages you can respond to. The Asus ZenWatch 2 was the other one that I had. The Asus ZenWatch 2 had that functionality when I had it when I was using the Android Wear. That was another one where I had it, and it's just the way I where I work and stuff. I think I hit it on too many things or whatever, because that was a touchscreen watch, and that one haptic sensors on it went, like, the screen is fairly fine by the looks of it, but it won't acknowledge any touch. So
yeah, I think if I get another one, I'll definitely check the Gadget Bridge compatibility list first before I buy one. So I didn't even know about Gadget Bridge when I got this. And then I discovered it later after I was looking for an alternative to the Mi Fit app. And what I don't like is that this won't, you know, if you didn't want to use Mi Fit, I wanted to use Samsung Health or whatever the Google one is. And, Google won't connect to it without the Mi Fit app, and Samsung won't connect even with the Mi Fit app because it has to be a Samsung product. Even though I have a Samsung phone, I can't use non-Samsung, you know, hardware as far as tracking goes.
Well, that stinks. Is there any way that you can, is there like a different fitness tracking application that'll work with that stuff? Or work with whatever data you can get off of the Gadget Bridge?
Well, I saw there's another fitness tracking app, but I don't know if it's open source or not, on the Play Store. I haven't looked in F-Droid, but supposedly it works with Mi Band. I'm not sure if it works with Mi Band 4 or not. I'll have to check. Let me see. I looked at it before. Hang on a second.
So looking at
okay.
This.
Yeah, it's called Notify and Fitness, and it works with Mi Band 1, 2, and 3. But in order to use it with the Mi Band 4, you have to have the Mi Fit app installed. So again, you run into that problem of, you know, not being able to choose where your data goes.
Looking at this list, they support a lot more watches or wearables since the last I looked. There is something called the Mi Scale 2. In the description here on the GitHub page, they say, currently only displays a toast after stepping on the scale.
Yeah, I've seen that scale, a toast. And I think it's the same issue is that the Mi Fits, at least the Mi Scale 2, you need the Mi Fit app. And it all has to do with that server-side key from Xiaomi.
But they got the Amazfit Bip, the Core 2, BFH16, the Casio GB, the H Plus devices, ID115, Lenovo Watch 9, Live View, Mi Band, 1A, 1S, the 2, the 3, apparently they're working on the 4, the Mi Scale, the number 1 F1, the Pebble, all of them, including the Pebble 2, Techlast, H10, oh, the H10 and the H30, the X-Watch, affordable Chinese Casio-like smartwatches. Huh. Vibratissimo? Is it an experimental in the Z-Time?
Yeah, the only reason I can think of where they may have done that with the Mi Band 4 is that they didn't want you to use, you know, other apps, so they weren't able to access your data. So now they've used this key to make sure that you have to use their app. So anyway, I'm glad I found it, Gadget Bridge. I'm just disappointed I can't use it with this fitness tracker.
Okay, if we're ready to move on to the next topic, we talked about this briefly in the pre-show, but Honky, I guess you've been using Node-RED, and I guess you're using it sort of in part of your security installation, but as I read the webpage, it's kind of just to tie Internet of Things devices together.
So Minix is actually the one who's been using it as a the home security stuff. He was giving a shout out because I had suggested it to him. So how has it been going with the Node-RED? We had talked a little bit in the pre-show about it.
Yeah, I like it. It's you know, totally new to me using Node-RED. I've just been exploring like actually how to use it. I haven't implemented anything yet. But it's neat because it's all in your web browser once you get it installed. And it uses visual representations of like your devices, you know, with like wires going to them and stuff like that to connect them together. And I haven't really seen that approach outside of like proprietary software. So I'm interested in getting more into it. I've only installed it and messed with it a little bit. I kind of got sidetracked, but I think it's definitely the solution that to what we had discussed before about getting my security system to start recording when my Wi-Fi, when my phone is off the Wi-Fi network, and stop recording whenever I'm back on the network. And it works with HA, Home Assistant too, which is what I've seen a lot of people, how they've implemented it. As far as what I want to do is in conjunction with Home Assistant, which is also an open source home automation application. So yeah, it's really neat. If you haven't checked it out and you're interested at all in stuff like that, home automation or just, you know, your IoT stuff, connecting them together or having them interact with each other, definitely check out Node-RED.
Yeah, it's so cool with the little boxes. I mean, you can download different plugins for different things. Like I was talking about in the pre-show, is I wanted to set up something for Wake on LAN on this computer and have it interact with the Alexa app, my Echo Dot that I have, so the Alexa app. There's several plugins for it that'll do, you know, there are set up different ways and whatnot. So you download a plugin for that and you would spread it, and it just on the left hand side, it'll give you like a selection of different little boxes, and you just drag that box out there. And I downloaded a plugin for Wake on LAN and brought over the Wake on LAN, and then you set the, like, when you bring the box out, then you'll like specify in that box the different specifics of like the MAC address for the computer you want to set the Wake on LAN to, and then on like the one for the Alexa, what you want to specify what you want the to be able to say to the command you want to say for the Wake to be able to do the thing, and then you like drag this little line across to connect the two together. It's very cool, and I love how visual it is, you know, that, because it makes it really simple to do. I haven't had much success with it, but that's mostly, I think, because like I was discussing earlier about my problems with the Wake on LAN.
Yeah, and it's like super lightweight too. It's written in Node.js, and you can run it on a Raspberry Pi, which is actually what I'm running it on right now. And as long as it's on your network, you know, it can control all that stuff. And I think they call them flows or something when you set up a pathways like that. But you know, if you're not really familiar with programming, I mean, you can use this. It takes a little bit of skill as far as understanding some JavaScript stuff, but basically it's mainly all visual, and it's all browser based, and it's pretty cool.
Yeah, I did the same thing. I did I took one of my Raspberry Pis and I put DiaPy on it, and there are two things, and both of those, Home Automation Assistant and Node-RED, things you can install through DiaPy.
Okay.
Yeah, and they're both lightweight too, so even with limited hardware, you can do a lot of stuff.
Okay, I think you've answered one of my questions. So you do have to set up a central server of some kind, even if it's doing other things as well. And does it detect hardware from different families? Because you mentioned some of the Amazon stuff. Is it going to pick up Google Home stuff and other things and integrate it all together?
Yes, from my understanding, they do have plugins for Google Home as well as like Alexa.
Well, this is what I've been talking about. Synchronicity, that's not right. But when everything comes together, you have all these different incompatible systems. And I've been thinking, you know, eventually there's going to have to be a single standard and integration.
Synergy.
Thank you. That's what I was thinking of.
And I think with those two applications, Node-RED and Home Automation Assistant, you can link all of your stuff together pretty easily. Well, I'm not going to say easily, but it is out there to be able to do. like just getting the Alexa thing, Alexa to play with Node-RED is not necessarily easy because Amazon doesn't necessarily want you to do that. So there's like a workaround. Well, like one of the plugins to do it, because I went through probably like three or four of the Alexa plugins, and one of them is where you like set up an account with the with Amazon for kind of like Joe, when you were talking about setting up a an Echo on a Raspberry Pi, you had to go in and sign up for as a developer. You kind of have to do some. One of the ways to set up connect Alexa to Node-RED was you had to set up a developer account and sign in with that, and then you can connect. Like it goes out to that developer account and then comes back into the house or something. I forgot which way I finally settled on, but I didn't have to do too much.
Does it still limit Amazon Music?
No, because this is just a plugin to be able to communicate with Node-RED. It's not creating something else like the Raspberry Pi Echo.
Okay.
And the repos themselves, the repo itself is huge. I mean, unless your use case is really unique, you're probably going to find what you need already within the repos to build your flow.
Yeah, I didn't have this on the schedule. I'll throw it in here because I haven't done anything with it yet. I mentioned last show I had got the on Prime Day I'd gotten the Amazon 5 external camera, and I had just assumed coming from Amazon that would be integrated to their Echo and Fire system, and on the opposite wall in the living room / dining room that I usually don't watch anything on, set that up as the monitor and have all five cameras on there at once. And then I was looking to talk. It's like, yeah, there's an iPhone app and a Android app, and no mention of Amazon integration. I was thinking, well, you shouldn't be selling this as an Amazon product, unless it can be integrated. But then finally, my research, there is an Amazon plugin, so I should be able to do exactly what I was thinking of, is throwing it up on a TV with the Fire. With the Fire Stick, and be able to monitor, and then also on my phone or whatever TV for Fire Stick I want to put, any Fire device I want to throw it up on. So that alleviated a lot of my concerns. And now with the Node-RED, I'm going to be interested in seeing how else I can integrate it.
Well, I think with even if they didn't have the application, if they had a Android application, you could always sideload the Android application to any Fire Stick.
Oh, I didn't realize that you could do that.
There's an application called Android to Fire. And basically all it does is if you have that application installed on your phone, it'll open up a giant, it'll open up the list of all applications you have on your phone, and you can just tap onto it and have it send it to that, which, and then you choose like which Fire TV device you want to send it to, whether Fire Stick or whatever. And it'll just load that application to the your Fire TV. Now the one thing is, if it's not a native Fire application, it won't show up on the like the home page. You'd have to go into like settings and applications to find it, or to get to install a non-Amazon a launcher on there, in which case you may have to sideload the launcher as well. I don't remember. I don't remember how I installed the launcher. It might have been the same way where I did app to Fire.
Nice. That also helps me out with my old Fire tablet that doesn't have, you know, essentially Android, but doesn't have access to the Play Store. And there's, you know, I've talked about there's a lot of stuff on there, like, you go on there and there's like a Firefox emulator, but what it is, you know, everything you do is going through this third party, I'm pretty sure. And then, you know, then coming back to this Firefox analog. So if you install that Firefox like app, you know, whoever's the middleman can see everything that you do, which I was not interested in doing. So yeah, that would be great. You know, that, you know, when I wouldn't have to, you know, wipe the tablet, you know, and put in, you know, which can be done, I'm pretty sure, and install a generic Android to get to the Play Store and the apps I actually want. So definitely on several fronts, I'll be looking at that queue.
So from my understanding, I don't know that. So the Android to Fire TV, I believe, just works with like the Fire Sticks and stuff, because it looks for the Fire, like Fire Sticks from Fire TV, over the network. Whether that'll work with tablets as well, I don't know. I have seen I have seen some write-ups where people have gotten the Play Store onto their Fire devices. I tried one of them before, and it didn't really work for me. I might have just done something wrong, or because you have to basically, there's like three different parts you have to download for to be able to get the Play Store onto a device. There's like there's three separate applications you have to download and install in order to be able to get the Play Store onto a device. I might have screwed that up, and that's why it didn't work. Maybe I'll, in a minute or so, I'll try to see if I can find that a link to that. But at the same time, I've also with I bought a Kindle Fire 8 recently, and I use the F-Droid market on there, and then besides the that, I just use their Amazon market, and it's been okay. I mean, the very small use case I have for it, I mean, was mostly Netflix, Hulu, and their browser that is a Silk browser. I think it's a Silk browser. It's not bad. It's not fantastic, but it's not bad. You obviously can't, like, you know, share links between devices type of a thing. You know, if you do Fire, log into Firefox and then have it share your, what am I thinking of?
Firefox Sync?
Yeah. You know, it won't sync, but, you know, it works. But, yeah, I had to use the F-Droid market for a couple of things.
Well, I have to admit, Sync saved my butt after Fire, because, you know, all the systems I had in the house burned up, but I had the one out in the workshop that also had Firefox Sync. And, you know, a lot of people be critical that, you know, most of my passwords, except for financial stuff, are, saved, in my Firefox profile. But, you know, I don't remember, I do some manipulation, but still, you know, that's what got me back online, is that, you know, I still had a system connected to Fire, to Sync, and then every time I installed Firefox on a new system, I could, you know, go back from there and not lose all my passwords.
Right, and that's decent backup.
Okay, I guess we'll continue with your links. Honky, you know, you actually hit on a couple that I had, so I think you go more depth, so we'll go with you. It's the Evil Gnome spyware, and apparently, yeah. Well, they say that code for this was accidentally, I put that in air quotes, uploaded. I am thinking maybe the developer is more like, yeah, giving you fair warning to plug these holes. Maybe not. Could have been an accident. But, you know, I guess there are plugins to GNOME to do different things. And you could hide this code in one of those plugins, make it look like a legitimate plugin. But you would have key loggers and screen loggers and a whole bunch of different stuff, you know, enabling remote access. So I'll let you take it from there, Honky.
Well, I think you pretty much just said most of it. Yeah, I mean, if you were using a GNOME plugin, you might want to just run. Let me find, where did that go? How to detect Evil Gnome malware. Check if your Linux system is infected with Evil Gnome spyware. You can look for gnome-shell-ext executable in the home.cache/gnome-software/gnome-shell-extensions directory. Basically, that's the... that's where, as I guess, that's the executable or extension that where they're finding most of the problems. So if you look in your GNOME extensions and it's in there, then you probably either need to get rid of it or update it. I've never used GNOME extensions before, so I don't know a whole lot about it. I saw this article and thought it'd probably be a good thing to get out there as much as possible, you know, to let people know who do use GNOME extensions that, hey, check it out.
And I remember back in the day, at least, I don't know if anybody's using it anymore, there, you know, well, I think it was like GNOME 2 desktop, which is probably not relevant, but you know, there used to be GNOME and KDE desktops for Windows. So I don't know if, you know, even if you're on Windows, are you vulnerable to this? Probably not. Check that out. Now, does it, I'm guessing from what you said, it does not give clear instructions for removal?
No. It doesn't. It just says how to detect Evil Gnome malware. It gave that. We believe this is a premature test version. We anticipate newer versions to be discovered and reviewed in the future, which could potentially shed more light into the group's operations. Research conclude. Since security and antivirus products are currently failing to detect the Evil Gnome malware, researchers recommend concerned Linux administrators to block the command and control IP addresses listed in the IOC section of Itzer's blog post. I guess there's the original blog post where it there was specific IP addresses that the malware was pinging. It seems like just don't install GNOME extensions, but I don't know. Like, there might be some distributions where the GNOME extensions are already put in there by the people, you know, by the people who made the distribution, depending on what you're running.
Well, it may be one of those things. Don't go outside a repository. You know, don't go some website. Hey, this is some cool thing you can add into GNOME. Click here. But again, this is apparently in development. Could have been a mistake, but I'm wondering if these aren't some like gray hat hackers who are saying, hey, you know, we've discovered this vulnerability. Somebody needs to patch this thing. Okay, and again, Honky, you seem to have discovered this Endeavor OS distro.
Oh yeah, it's just the these are the guys who took over Antigross, or basically they're keeping Antigross alive. I know I've downloaded it. I was going to give it a try on one of these laptops over here, but the one I wanted to try it on, the left mouse click button doesn't work on it, and I have to do the tap on the touchpad, and it didn't register the tap on the mouse pad, so I couldn't. I mean the trackpad. So I didn't get very far with that, but I mean, I've always been a fan of Arch-based systems. I like Pac-Man a lot. I'm just trying to promote these guys because they when Antigross went away, they kind of picked up the ball and ran with it. So,
yeah, isn't this the third iteration? I've run Antigross, and there was what was it before it was Antigross?
I am not sure.
Okay, we'll have to do research, but I do know I was running it, and then all of a sudden, hey, it's Antigross.
I want to look
it up. This is another one I think was the same, pretty much the same thing that I cited. You talked about Chris Wright, CTO of Red Hat, did a Q&A on Reddit, and short answer, nothing is changing. My article was, IBM has bought out Red Hat. We've known that for several months, but the deal was finally closed here this last month.
Right, and the CTO just wanted to reassure people that, you know, everything was fine, everything was good, because everyone was concerned about IBM purchasing Red Hat and how is that going to change things for Red Hat, and he basically went on Reddit and answered a bunch of questions. And like I said, to sum it all up, basically his answer to most things were Red Hat is still going to operate the way they have before. Nothing is changing. So I think, like I said, he was mostly trying to, you know, assuage people's fears that IBM taking over Red Hat was going to change the whole way that Red Hat does business and how they're, that they still going to remain open source on everything and whatnot.
Doesn't IBM have their own Linux distribution?
I think so. And I, you know what, I, that might have come up in one of the questions. I'm not sure if that one got answered though, because it ran for a while, and then he was only answering questions for a while, because I went down through the list there.
Well, I would certainly expect the Red Hat people saying, yeah, we're not going to agree to a takeover unless we have the same autonomy that we've always had. However, I'm certain we can all cite examples of where, yeah, fine, that went along for a year or two, and then the parent company closed their hand over their affiliate, got rid of people. I don't expect from IBM. IBM seems to be a huge friend of open source. I would think they would be choking off the golden goose if they did that. But just as because they come out right now, hey, yeah, nothing's ever going to change, and we're autonomous, you know, okay, but, you know, these guys above you are going to have some influence and some sway, so, you know, take that for what you think. I guess if, you know, Red Hat becomes something we don't like, I guess that's, you know, the green light for Canonical.
I wonder if you get, if you subscribe for Red Hat support, you get some kind of interface for, what is that artificial intelligence IBM has? I think it was on Big Jeopardy. Blue? Watson, is that what it was?
Oh, you're right. You're a Watson.
If this will tie into Watson somehow, that would be interesting.
Yeah, but Watson is like 15, 20 years old.
Yeah, I guess so. Are they still developing Watson, or did they just give up on it?
Yeah, when Watson has his own podcast, we'll, you know, I'll believe in it. And I do think, you know, within our lifetimes, we will, you know, there will be at least a voice computer interface that will be pretty much indistinguishable with talking to an actual human. You know, the whole Turner test thing.
So what does IBM even do now? I don't really see them mentioned like in the server space as far as other companies go. And I don't know if they have like specialized software that they sell, or I haven't really heard much from IBM in a long time.
Well, I do think they, you know, they are mainly Linux based servers.
I mean, do they sell the hardware, IBM hardware? Is that what they do?
Well, I think the hardware is still PowerPC. I may be wrong. They for years they were PowerPC based. I don't know if development of that has gone away, but, you know, but I'm thinking that's the direction they still are.
Yeah, the only IBM servers or machines I see now are at least 10 years old or so when I see them in different companies. I don't remember seeing a new piece of IBM hardware. Not lately, anyway.
I don't know. I think they're still right up there in Edge servers and stuff. Or Blade servers, I'm thinking. Okay.
I wonder if they're investing any time or resources into ARM servers.
Well, I'm sure everybody in the industry's got to be thinking of it. Okay, Honky. Yeah, I've heard about this security flaw in VLC. If you could care to elucidate.
Yep. Hold on a sec. Let me open up the link. So apparently there is a vulnerability in VLC that allows for RCE remote code execution, which potentially allows bad attackers to install, modify, or run software without authorization, and could be used to disclose files on the host system translation. I'm sorry, translation VLC security hole could allow hackers to hijack your computer and see your files. So, there's a security vulnerability in VLC. Update VLC.
I wonder if that would still be a problem with, like, the app image, even if you didn't update.
I don't know. I guess that depends on... are app images sandboxed?
Nah, it doesn't really make a whole lot of sense to completely sandbox VLC in an app image, so probably not. I mean, I know it's you can take the executable anywhere, but I don't know. I don't think it's isolated.
Yeah, I think if I think if it's there, whether it's even if it's not sandboxed from the rest of the distro, then it should be able to. It should be vulnerable.
It would have to be running, though, because it's not actually installed.
That's true, too. But then again, I think no matter what, it'd still have to be running, wouldn't it?
Well, if it's installed, you know, you can find a way to kick it off.
True. But still, if it's not, I mean, if the application isn't currently running, there shouldn't be like any way that. So let's say there's a vulnerability where basically it has a giant hole because, you know, it creates a giant hole every time it gets turned on. I mean, there's no way to turn it on from the outside, right?
Probably not. Is this another one of those vulnerabilities that's never been actually used in the wild?
I think so. I'm skimming through the article now. I mean, I read all of it a while ago when I posted it, but I haven't looked at it since. And again, my takeaway from it was don't have any plans on uninstalling VLC anytime soon. I just plan on making sure I update all my systems because they're already working on a patch for it. So,
yeah, VLC is one of those core apps. What do you replace it with?
Well, there are plenty of video players out there. It's just not all of them. Well, I can't think of any that have as much functionality built in as VLC.
Right.
Exactly. I mean, my point was, you, if you're to eliminate VLC, you'd have to replace it with multiple applications. It's been around and such a, well, you know, it's a flagship app for non-open systems. You know, it's like GIMP or OpenOffice or, you know, to go on Windows. And, you know, it's kind of a black eye to say, and I don't know if it's a vulnerability if you have VLC on Windows, but I mean, we're going around, you know, saying, okay, you know, if you don't install an open operating system, but at least, hey, you know, you've got OpenOffice. I mean, these are the big three: OpenOffice, GIMP, and VLC. And be it, you know, if there's a vulnerability, you know, like you said, I'm sure it's working on it, but that's, you know, that's a huge black eye for open source. You know, say, okay, yeah, VLC, you can't trust it. Okay, and Anki, you have a link to some of your favorite alternative operating systems?
Oh, they're not my favorite. It was an article I found that I thought was kind of cool. It is just basically alternative operating systems to Mac, Linux, or Windows. And there's a couple on here I know and a couple on here I don't know. Like Arc, the first one is Arc OS, which is a last of the OS2 projects. Haiku, which I had actually gotten from, I got a copy of Haiku back when I used to get, I forget which Linux magazine, but I'd gotten a copy of Haiku and I ran that for a little bit. React OS, which is an alternative to Windows Server 2003. FreeDOS, which I know one person who I'm hoping is still awake likes to use.
I have news about the OS2 stuff.
The Arca, you want to go back to that one? Because I've never even used. I remember when OS2 was fighting for market share back in the day, but.
Well, Arca is, first, it is a commercial hack of OS2 blessed by IBM. There is no OS2 source code, so everything has to be hacked up. It is in release and in production. I've looked at it. It's 32-bit only, but will run on 64-bit and multi-core systems. It costs real money. The home student version for non-commercial use is $129 and gives you 6 months of support.
Ouch!
The commercial version if you're stuck with an OS 2 app and you have to run it on modern hardware, is $229 and gives you a year of support. Support is available at some price per year, per instance. The Ecom Station is the prior extended service version of OS 2. It is another hack, but it is not a clean hack. ArcOS is a clean hack. It relies a lot on open source software ports for its user land. I had considered it for some older 32-bit machines that I have. But again, it is radically 32-bit, 4 gig maximum memory. Anything else can be used as a RAM drive. But again, it is very, it is OS 2. I don't know anymore because it is purely commercial. And unlike Windows, you can't even run it temporarily.
Before I was a Linux geek, I used to be an operating system geek. And, you know, was trying things. And, you know, you could download OS 2 Warp and boot into it. And then it's hit or miss if your hardware worked. And if... You know, I actually did call up IBM. It's like, yeah, it's the responsibility of your hardware manufacturer to write a driver for Warp. Whereas Windows was like, yeah, I'm sorry to prompt Windows, but yeah, we're going to make everything work. You know, I had BIOS, which is, of course, the precursor to Haiku. And I've been wanting Haiku to work for years. But, you know, the thing they said about Haiku, or not, sorry, BIOS at the time was, well, the first time you run a program, we will, you know, convert all the system calls to BIOS. So... You know, the more you run BIOS, if your system will run, we'll run the Windows hardware or the Windows software. But every time you run a sub application, it's going to be converted to native BIOS. And that, that never really manifested, I had a lot of OSs I played with, but, till I hit Linux, there really wasn't a viable alternative to Windows. You know, like I said, I really wanted to like OS 2, but you dialed up IBM and they were like, yeah, it's not our problem if your hardware doesn't work. Complain to your hardware vendor.
One of the things that you're buying when you're buying ArcOS is their hacked up drivers for more modern hardware and modern protocols and whatnot. For those that need it, it's a very niche system. However, quite frankly, I'd be more interested in OpenVMS.
And I'm blanking what the Windows clone operating system.
React OS is a Windows clone. I wouldn't that again is always thrashing to try to get some. A compatible Windows environment.
Well, yeah, I like the idea of React OS, but as I understand it, it's stuck in XP. They're still trying to do an emulation of XP, and I think it was I'm pretty sure it was an HPR episode, a few years ago, talking to the developer of ReactOS, and the interviewer asked if ReactOS was susceptible to the same exploits as Windows. And he enthusiastically said, absolutely. Okay, that was supposed to be funny.
What is funny is that there are versions of XP in the wild that are being generated and regenerated today.
Well, we talked earlier about, shrinking set, but a lot of people still running XP even years after they were updates. And I think we talked about last show, huge vulnerability patched. I don't know if all the rest of them were, but I mean, for government machines and ATMs and stuff, they have been patching XP along, but they haven't been they haven't been contributing that to the public because Microsoft doesn't want you running XP anymore. And we were talking about Windows 7 coming to end of life and the interface being different, and me saying there's going to be a lot of small businesses and maybe even major business saying, yeah, we do not want that new interface. We want an interface that looks like, back to Windows 95, essentially. That hasn't changed much.
10 isn't that much different from 7. Now, 8 was a big jump with how the start menu worked and all that. But 10 kind of went back a bit. Yeah, there's still some of that Metro feel there, but it's still all from the start menu, so it's not as bad.
No. And I have done that for a customer, the whole, take 8 and make it look like 7. And then he had that, and then he must have clicked on 10 update, and was perfectly happy or whatever. And then, 10 what X. I agree.
Right. Classic start menu was a great application for 8.
Right.
Does Classic run on 10?
It doesn't really need to. I'm sure it probably could. But with the way the start menu works in 10, like I said, it's not all that different from 7. It's just a little bit more user-friendly. The search function works a little bit better.
Well, the start menu still has those, it still has large icons in there. Not as big as it was before, but it wasn't, as the Metro interface did. But they're still in there, and it's... if you're going to use it for an office type environment, really all you have to do is strip out all of the useless applications in there and just have, just the ones that you need to, for the office, and it should work perfectly fine because, you don't need a giant Netflix, the Netflix or giant thing that says games on it and stuff. And, as soon as you rip out some of that, it's mostly just, your office applications, Microsoft Office, and then your web browser, and they're usually just, you can set it down so it's small and so it looks nice and, compact and not big and gaudy.
Yeah,
it doesn't take over the whole screen.
But even with 10, some of those, like I said, they have things on there like the Netflix and games and stuff like that, and the icons for them are relatively big compared to beforehand when it was just a small line of text and maybe a tiny little icon on the corner. It's not as simple as it for a lot of them, when you get, when you like, if you buy a PC and bring it home, it's got a lot of stuff pre-installed that still kind of looks kind of gaudy. If you bring, you can't bring something like that into a workplace unless you basically strip out all of that stuff and just leave like just the applications that you need, and then you can definitely bring it into office, and it would be very nearly seven, you know, Windows 7 esque.
Yeah, but you know, I have dealt with a lot of offices that are very, very, you know, opposed to change, you know, and keeping me running old software as long as they can. You know, I had school that they came up on the, you know, before Office, or is it the original integrated Microsoft platform? And they didn't want to know how to use Word. They didn't want to know how to use the Microsoft spreadsheet. They, you know, they were used to the one that came before, and for years and years, they Microsoft works, yes. You know, they wanted me to keep stall, you know, 10, 15 years after, you know, the last version of Microsoft works. You know, they kept insisting on me installing that on every upgrade.
That sounds like it would be difficult to maintain.
You'd be surprised. Keeps going. I mean, I have one customer that, you know, has schedule 95, and for all intents and purposes, it's Microsoft Exchange server without the server. And I have to keep going in there every once in a while because they're, you know, for some reason their notifications quit coming up, and then I go in there and beat on it for an hour and make it work eventually. But I mean, they're running a pirated version of Office 95 just for the schedule.
That's almost 25 years old now. That's wild.
Yeah, I'm always amazed. I'm always going to tell them, you know, one of these days, this thing ain't going to work anymore. But they're closing their local office, so I guess I won't have to deal with it.
I run into a lot of this at even places like Micro Center, where you see 7 at least out there, maybe other stuff. And I know that my local library is not going to be running 10, I don't believe.
Well, I mean, there's a whole bunch of resistance to, you know, the end of XP. I can't imagine how many multiplications of that there would be to the end of 97 or Windows 7. I'm sorry.
Well, first, if you've fought hard enough to get Windows 7 to stay Windows 7 instead of getting 10-ified, that says something right now.
Well, it's not going to be just small offices. It's going to be corporations. It's like, no, we don't, you know, we're not going to do the training budget to teach people for a new interface.
Well, it's basically the same interface.
Yeah, but you don't see, you know, see people. It's like, you know, when the school I worked with years ago went, you know, and for years it was because Mac provided really, really cheap student computers, but, you know, so everything was Mac. And then we went over to Windows, and that was the decision I was participated in, the superintendent came and said, you know, you know, should we do Mac or Windows? And I said, well, you know, when these kids get out of school, most of them are going to be, you know, Windows in the workplace, not Mac. So, and I think this was at the tail end of Mac, you know, selling computers to schools at a discount. So, you know, they went all Windows, and then during this transition, you know, we're buying cheap Dells, and, you know, secretaries did not like this at all. And one of them had, yeah, you know, they'd bought a two-button mouse for the Mac so that they could do a right-click, and was not PC compatible. And she's insisting, yeah, I've got to have that same mouse. And it's like, well, yeah, it's ain't plugging in. Sorry.
Yeah, if you think people are going to resist or if you think XP users are going to hang on for dear life, wait until you get your Windows 7 people.
Exactly. And I mean, we've proven the last couple months, you know, the government came out and said, yeah, release this patch, you know, to XP, because it's going to be devastating if you don't.
Well, I mean, I've got sitting here an XP CD, and occasionally, instead of using Wine, I get the itch to install it on a VM, but I fight the urge. I'm sure that if there are people that had Windows 7 disks around, they're also going to be running them to the last minute, and then trying to find the unofficial patches, like you have the unofficial patches for everything back to Windows 2000.
Well, I mean, guys know in the last year I upgraded to an i5, you know, at a good price, and had Windows 10 installed, but I'm running Linux. It's dual boot. I can go back into Windows, but the quote gaming dual boot machine before that was a purchased copy of Windows 7, you know, with Linux. So I guess I'll wipe out the whole hard drive now when I do something with it. But, yeah, definitely 7 would be, you know, would be my preference, except that, you know, 10 has support for newer games, I guess, which I hate, but, you know, everything comes into life, and invariably Microsoft screws it up.
I think Windows 10 is Windows' attempt at something like a Mac OS 10, or they're just going to keep upgrading, calling it 10, if I'm not mistaken.
Well, I think they finally gave up on their dream of a single interface for mobile and desktop. They realized that's just not doable.
Yeah, they never really broke into the mobile market like they were hoping to, I guess.
And Minix, your volume is suddenly really, really low. Be back in just a second.
Did anybody see anything else on this list they thought was interesting? I know they had the obvious ones of FreeBSD and Chrome OS, but...
I haven't really checked it out too much. I'm going to log off here in a minute. I'm headed home. As far as topics I wrote down, they're not really time-sensitive or anything. We can discuss them anytime you want, so...
Okay.
Yeah, I'm sorry we've gone late. Couple things I'd like to hit on that are topical. So are we done with feedback?
Sure.
Okay. Since I'm at the top, I will jump into my topics, though not all of them. You know, I kind of realized this last Monday, oh, shoot, Kansas Linux Fest is in less than 2 weeks. Got the word out to a lot of people last night. I went on Tilts. If anybody heard my completely awkward, unprepared, talk about Tilts, or talk about Kansas Linux Fest on Tilts last night. Not last night, Wednesday night. Sorry. But I also sent off, notifications to a lot of podcasts. Hey, Kansas Linux Fest is going to start August 9th. Appreciate a mention. And Phil from Sunday Morning Linux Review also picked that up, sent it up to, other podcasts that I didn't know about or whatever. So we ought to be getting some pretty good coverage on that. I know it came upon me too late. I should have got out there a week or so, or more ahead of time. And if anybody's coming in from out of town, giving them time to get tickets, get plane reservations or whatever. So, I'm not really expecting a lot of people from outside of town or outside the immediate area to show up. If you do, hit me up. I'll be available to show you around town as much as I can. Briefly, because I've mentioned this before, there's really no accommodations anywhere around the Wichita State University. Very little places, surprisingly, around campus. Very few watering holes. So, I got reservations at the hotel at Old Town. I've been there before. I was hoping to do some other, maybe something else, because last time is okay, but maybe try something different. Closest thing I think down there is Marriott, walking distance. I was surprised. I was thinking, driving around the area, there were a bunch of places, bunch of options. But if you look on Google Maps, most of them are like, yeah, this is, 20, 30 minutes walking distance. So I guess I was overestimating. But, I could still get reservations, Monday, for $140 a night, which is probably better than a lot of places, with a dedicated block of rooms, which Kansas Linux Fest usually doesn't do, because most people are, commuting home every night. I could do that. It's an hour's drive. I decided not to, so that I could participate in evening activities. And this year, the Friday night film is The Codebreakers. I looked on IMDb. The closest thing I could come up with is, TV series. I'll think of it. But, document. Sorry, say that again.
Numbers?
No, not numbers. What? Well, I'll put search in. One of the documentary networks, but, you know, code breakers through history, which I thought would be interesting. And going to about 8:30 or 9 the first evening. And then Saturday evening, they're, you know, again at Headshots, which is a bar that has, you know, coin-op games and console games from like the 90s or whatever, till about 9 o'clock. So the rest of my time, as I talked about, I said, since there's no accommodations anywhere near the campus, and very few restaurants and bars, I like to get a place in the taxpayer created and artificial, entertainment district known as Old Town in Wichita. And I looked and, I could get a room at the Old Town Hotel, which is the Keen Cutter building. If anybody locally knows what that is, but, $140 a night. And then the next one was the Marriott, and that was $255. So, you know, I've been in the Old Town, and I was wanting something different, but I'm not going to spend $100 different a night. And then the rest of them, I was thinking driving around, and, you know, there's a lot of hotels down here, but, walking distance to those places was, 20, 30 minutes. So try not to ramble here, but, so I will make more note, of the, local or the Old Town hotels, see if there's any alternatives that do not show up on Google Maps. But, the price I got from Hotel Old Town, comparable to when we get a block of rooms to stay at a conference. So I'm not complaining.
All right, guys, it's extremely late. I'm gonna have to get going.
Yeah, thanks, Joe, from jumping.
Hey, Joe.
And let me real quick, since the schedule is up finally as of last night, and I don't know if that was something, but I kind of goaded him yesterday, so I don't know if I had anything to do with getting the schedule up finally or not. Friday, it's essentially just the movie, and like I said, the Codebreakers. Looks interesting, but I think it's just a cable documentary. Let's see, covering your AWS website security, Bibisco, write your own story, Kahuna open source operating library system, MySQL without SQL, shell-based phone, Postmark OS, CF engines, how open source rules entertainment media, busting security myths with open source, dot files, a survey, broken trust, porting Amazon baseband firmware to MediaTek chips, getting started with open source, building your own NAS with SBC and Legos, DNS filtering and other fun with blind RPZs, intro to Linux-based home automation, proper care and feeding of a MySQL database, open source contribution with OpenStreetMap, org, all the things, and then I guess on Sunday, wrapping up with an ice cream parlor. And like I said, the first night there's a movie, Friday night, second night on Saturday up to 9 o'clock, there is a get-together at Headshots, which is a bar with, coin-op games for free and, like 90s console games. So, a bunch of stuff. I'm going to be interested in that. Finally have a, decent DSLR. So sometime next week, I'm going to be getting in a tripod and a directional mic for it. And, being an unofficial chronicler of whatever talks that I get to see, I'll throw them up on my, my Google storage and, probably my YouTube and include those links. I'm really looking forward to another KLF. So, I'm sure a lot of people out there listening, not terribly enthusiastic, but looks to me like a fairly good break between enterprise and stuff you can use at home. Okay. Next thing I wanted to mention was Ohio Linux Fest. Since KLF kind of snuck up on me, I didn't want Ohio to do as well. I've got my room, probably book my flight later today, tonight. Got two beds in the room. What I'm going to say about that, I have supported people in the past who, had a bad year in business, who I knew, and said, okay, yeah, room's already paid for. If nobody comes forward like that, yeah, I would not mind splitting the price of the room. It's got two beds in it. So, there's that. It's, November 1 and 2 in Columbus, Ohio. What we always used to do in the past is come in on the previous Thursday. So that would be September 31. And the flight I'm looking at looks like it'll put me in town about 2 o'clock. Nice thing about Columbus, it's weird. None of these conferences that I go to, there's like an airport shuttle from the hotel. But at least in Columbus, there's a municipal system that is fairly inexpensive and fairly quick. To and from the airport. At the airport, there's like a vending machine sort of thing to get a ticket. And you'll get downtown to the convention center pretty quick. Similar thing in Detroit, but it's like, it's an hour and a half to get from the airport to convention center, so it's not worth it. So, if anybody's in Columbus, if the flight I'm looking at is still available, I'll be there, between 2 and 3 in the afternoon. Probably hit the Dwarf Market, get a lunch, and then head over to Barley's, get a beers, and decide on the day from there. So, okay, that's the way that's lining up. And like I said, if somebody is saying, yeah, I want to attend OOF, but I can't afford the hotel room. If I know you, then that's cool. If, you know, if not, then maybe if you wanted to pitch in, you know, maybe not half, but some, you know, that could be cool too. You know, everything else, look on the schedule. We had been looking at me and X1101 and Taj from Urandom, you know, getting a podcaster's table. I'm gonna remind them, you know, if you're gonna do that, you need to do that now. So any podcasters who want to show up might want to participate. So emailing me, go to urandom-podcast.info. I think that's right. And you know, send an click on the host link and get your email for either Taj or X1101. And, you know, tell them you want to participate now. Because I'm going to say, if you guys want to get a table, now it's the time to do it, not the week before. Try not to ramble, but yeah, may even try the scooters this time going around town. Who knows? Gorkon has been, who lives in the area, you know, has been really forthcoming with, you know, destination eating establishments. You know, he's posted one lately of Cajun food. Believe it or not, I've been there so many years and still have never got in on the Mongolian barbecue. You know, that is my goal. Get, you know, even if it's just me, get the Mongolian barbecue finally. And like I said, we have tables. We probably, you know, not see a whole lot of presentations. Couple years ago when we did tables, I hardly saw any. Okay. Try not to bore everyone. You know, one of the YouTubers I follow, you know, who did a weekly podcast sort of, or participatory. That's not right. Participatory. In other words, inviting people to jump in. Was doing a podcast over Google Hangouts and posted a thing the other day. Said, yeah, we can't do that over Google Hangouts anymore. We're going to have to come up with different technology. And implied Google Hangouts was going away. And, you know, I did like the minimum amount of research. Went to Google Hangouts webpage. No indication it was going away. So, you know, this podcaster, you know, was a Second Amendment podcaster. I'll say that. And so I'm wondering if it was more like Google came up with, yeah, you can't do Hangouts with Second Amendment topics, which would seem to me to be problematic because not all of the Google Hangouts are something that's going to be further broadcast. It's like, you know, Skype sort of. And how dare they tell you what topics you will bring up. Of course, if it was on, you know, you Yeah, you can discuss whatever you want, but we're not going to post it to YouTube if it's this. I guess that's okay. Or it's like not okay, but their decision. So start a day looking at that podcast saying, what, Google, you know, and we've seen things, Google Hangouts might go away, you know, but it didn't find anything in general that Google Hangouts was going to go away. Okay, first impression of the Atomic Pi. It does have MMC. Yeah. EMMC. So it does come with an image built in. Got it up and running. And took forever because it was, you know, it looked first for Nixie Boot. And when it didn't find that, after about 15 minutes, finally came up. And this is one of those things. I had one job. I didn't get it done. Should have got it done. But even though the keyboard seemed to be supported before the GUI, you know, you screen went blank. You tapped on the key, you know, tapped on the key and the screen came back up. Doesn't look like it likes it. You know, once you get into the GUI, I type in a password because it comes up, you know, here's your login name. Here's the default password. And I made sure I wrote that down because I didn't know if that was going to be a one-time thing or not. If you reboot, you know, default password is going to show up every time. But I tried that password, didn't get logged in. I don't know. Could possibly be, even though the keyboard seems to be recognized in, you know, CLI, but before graphics, you know, because screen would go dark and you hit a key and it would refresh and come back. And the mouse was definitely recognized because you could move the mouse around screen. The Atom Pi comes with Ubuntu 18.04 installed in the EEMMC flash. When I go to do benchmarks against Raspberry Pis, various other things, I think I'll probably install the Debian image instead to more compete with Raspbian. But I could not get past the login. It said, you know, login name Atomic Pi. And here's your password, and I typed in the password. And wasn't that, it's just didn't like the keyboard. Even though the keyboard, I could hit it and, you know, clear what was on the screen, go to the next screen. You know, that worked just fine. Did not work, you know, going to the next page and so all right. So Ohio Linux Fest, November 1 to 2, Columbus, Ohio. Get there, like I said, mid-afternoon. Flying in, I thought about driving, but, you know, driving, I wouldn't be there till midnight. So, and I like to go out, get something to eat, get some beers on Thursday. So, And we usually have Sunday morning before we leave, everybody gets together for breakfast. So that was another limiting factor. So we'll do that, or I'll do that. Okay. Next thing, first impressions of Atomic Pi, and I plugged it into the external daughter board or whatever. I meant to take some pictures, but you can get some images. First link is the FAQ, and there, you know, a lot of stuff on that daughter board from Digital Loggers. And I think that's the original company designed the whole thing. It, you know, was not meant to be an SBC. It was meant to be integrated into a digital logging system, you know, which would take images of communications or photographs or whatever and send that back to a central system. Then our link for images, it does have Ubuntu 18.04 installed, which took me a while to boot up. I mean, literally minutes, you know, first run was literally minutes before I jumped into the show and didn't have time to adjust anything. And it does come with Ubuntu on there in the EEMC. And you come on and does pointer to the default user, and then the messages here, you know, default login. But even though the keyboard I hooked up seemed to work in pre-boot, you know, you know, hangs at a point, you hit control or shift or whatever, and then it goes on. Seemed to work like that. But, you know, when it locked up in the screen, didn't seem to do a thing. Very helpful Reddit site for this computer. So far, I may have to join Reddit to participate. But, how to use the various different interfaces, some of them. A link. If you didn't want to buy the daughter board or whatever, how to hook it up to power, just bare bones on YouTube. I haven't watched it yet. I plan to. Through the daughter board, you would think there might be just a barrel connector, match the barrel connector on the power supply, but no. What there is a female barrel connector with a positive and a negative tail on it. They're not even stripped. So, got to strip those and look online and about power, and it's the three wire connector right next to the Molex converter, and you hook up ground to ground and power to 5 volts. What breaks through at the side of that is the woman, I guess. Well, I guess this is Wild Wild West, so it wouldn't be. But, oh man, I don't know what I'm talking about now. but up too late. But there is, you know, a Reddit page on using the Atomic Pi. And there's a link to YouTube. If you do not want to get one of these breakout boards, how to plug it in directly. And even with the breakout board, it's not like there's a barrel connector to plug into. You know, there is a barrel receptacle in the kit with wire sticking out of it. And I exposed a little more wire than I probably should have. I want to put something in between them so they don't short out. But right now they aren't. But there is a screw down connector on the board that you open up and you plug this into. So you'd think there'd be a barrel connector soldered to the board, and there's not. Next, so you have ground, and you have 5-volt, and you also have a 12-volt option next to it, which you're not going to get from a normal wall plug. However, you know, I was thinking, you know, I'm not going to get out an old power supply just so I can plug in Molex connector to, which is on the daughter board that's attached, you know, power stuff. But, you know, I was thinking just today, you know, your old internal power supplies for IDE drives on USB, you know, that would probably be perfect. So, and I have just such that thing. I just don't remember where I saw it last. So we'll see how that goes. I mean, last time I saw it, I was powering a an ocean-going tribe of aquatic animals, and successfully they didn't even know where they needed to go.
What?
Next link. Pocket PC. I am not going to vouch for this. I kept trying to think where I found that link, and I got the impression I found it on a site that I trusted or whatever, but you know, I can't tell you that I trust this link from Tom's Finds. Seems way too good to be true. It is PC that would fit into like a cargo pocket. Gig of SSD storage. You know, touchscreen screen. And if you give them a dollar now, the price will drop from $1,099 to like $699, or is it $499 something? Seems to me like maybe a way to get a dollar out of everybody and never, you know, commit to sending anything back.
Could be.
And well, I want to look at that before I invest. You know, it's like hey, give us a dollar now, and then when this comes out, instead of being $1,099, it'll be $499. And if it's the specs they show, yeah, that's probably not a bad price. But, you know, you got to wonder, is this a scam to get a dollar out of everybody now?
Maybe.
So, you know, they've got a picture of it. I'm going to want to compare it to, you know, a lot of these micro laptops that we've been talking about over the last few months and see if they aren't just grabbing somebody's, you know, somebody else's picks to promote a vaporware system. You know, if it's something where they can't steal my information, then maybe it's worth the dollar to reserve my, you know, link in the list. But, you know, I'm not going to guarantee it.
Right. I think if you don't trust it, don't do it.
Okay. Real quick, next Samba version. And I'm not even sure what all this is, but to drop support for SMB1, which is original version of Samba, not very secure. So people have been asking for this for a while, I guess, except for the people who are stuck, you know, supporting SMB1. Trump administration is wanting to end end-to-end encryption. They want a back door into it. You know, definitely want, I oppose that, you know, so probably click on the link, find a way to send them a message that you don't want that.
Isn't he trying to get rid of Bitcoin too?
I hadn't heard that, but I wouldn't be surprised. Though I didn't include it. Oh yeah, it's the Urandom. You know, they had a picture of a Bitcoin vending machine.
Yeah, I heard about that. X101 saw one at one of his malls up in Maine.
And you got to wonder how legit that is.
Well, you know, there was a one of the guys on HBR who is living in China or Japan, somewhere there doing work, and he said he gets paid in Bitcoin, and that he has to go to, they have like Bitcoin ATMs there, which I think is crazy. Lyle also in the last show, not the newest one, but the last one, I think, said that he saw a Coinstar that said that they take they'll shell out Bitcoin.
Yeah, the guy in Asia, you're talking, would that be the last known god?
I don't think so. He had, I want to say, more European accent. Why, last known god moved to Japan? Or somewhere out there?
He keeps moving around. Last I knew, he was in Japan.
I don't think it was him, because like I said, I think he had a European accent, but...
Yeah, no, he wouldn't have a European accent. It's just, man, I wish I was that high up. You know, when I met him in Philly, he was at the point where, yeah, he could say, you know, if you don't let me work from where I want to work, I'm gonna, you know, I'm gonna get a different employer. You know, because he was in Philly, because, well, no, for a while, you know, he was in, after Philly, he was in Denver, and Denver was not metropolitan enough for him. So I know, you know, he's moved around a lot in Asia. He's been in parts of Soviet Russia. You know, but happiest in places like Japan, I think. You know, I just wish I could travel like him.
Right. So what do we think? Can we save some of these? We're past one now.
Yeah. You know, Minix was next up and he's dropped off. I'm sorry. I, you know, and I kind of got into insane rambling for a while there, so it's probably time to go.
It is super late.
Only other thing I talked about, Valve's new compiler is set up to optimize for the ATI GPUs.
Cool.
And I don't know what else to add to that.
Yeah, neither.
And I'm sorry if I dropped off the deep end there. I've been your host, 5150. With us has been Honky Magoo.
Good night.
And Netminer, if he hasn't gone to sleep.
No, I've been here. Thanks, folks. See you next time.
Okay, sorry for dragging this out. Next recording will be 16 August 2019. Should be able to tell you about Kansas Linux Fest at that time. Our music is Downright, provided by Klaatu and Brome. We want to thank Delwyn for his use of the Mumble server and Triple Zero Web Host for our web hosting. And also, thanks to Father Finch and Tony Bemis for all their help and support over the years.
Good night.
Hello, gentlemen.
I think right now the gentleman is just me. Evening, Minix.
Hey, boys. How y'all doing?
Not too shabby.
I'm just eating my dinner. I'm at work, so taking a lunch break.
What time do you normally work till?
I get off at 11, so about the time the show ends, I'm usually headed home.
Well, we appreciate you spending your lunch with us.
I appreciate you guys having me. It's always a lot of fun. And hopefully tonight we'll have lots of topics, because I don't have much. I have like a topic or two left over from last week, but that's about it.
Evening, 50.
Hey, Honky, I sound right?
Yeah, I think so.
It is weird. Clicked on the channel and it didn't automatically put me in there, so I had to right-click and say join channel. So, I don't know. First time I ever had to do that.
Anybody started watching The Boys yet on Amazon?
Just finished it.
Yeah, me too. I binged that right away.
What were your thoughts? I haven't started it yet.
Definitely dark, but really good.
Yeah, I would certainly agree with that. Without doing spoilers, kind of, reminded me of Punisher, except maybe the next level. This is definitely the year of the out there fringe comic book adaptations. I understand. Well, actually, for some reason, I was kind of surprised, cliffhanger at the end or whatever. I thought it was going to be, a one and done thing, but I didn't realize it's going to be a continuing series till the last episode. I don't know why. It just seemed like a one-off thing to me, but I guess we're not going to have to wait a year and a half for the next season. So, they're already filming.
Yeah, I was going to ask you that, if they had wrapped it up or if it like there's going to be a next season.
That seems to me like, they're going to, and of course it's, I don't know this directly because I never heard of them, like most people before the live action adaptation. But, there's enough comic book material out there for 4 or 5 seasons, and the comic book's still going. So, if it keeps up in popularity, this may be a continuing thing.
I had no idea the comic was still going. I read it years ago. I thought for sure it would have been finished by now.
Well, maybe not. I could be wrong. I'm no expert on the comic end of it, but it does seem like they're talking. There's enough material for several seasons if they want to do it.
Somebody told me that the the lead guy from the Preacher series is in the Boys too. Did y'all see him in there?
I still keep wanting to watch Preacher. I'm going to start now because apparently the Preacher comic book is from the same author.
Yeah, they're both from the same guy and both pretty dark. Definitely for adults, not for kids.
I thought I knew.
Yeah,
the name.
I mean,
sorry, I just pop up. I thought I knew the name Garth Ennis. I didn't remember where I remembered it from.
And you know the violence is, you know, very, very graphic. I mean, things like you couldn't have done without digital effects just probably 2 or 3 years ago. You know, probably not as gross maybe as some like a Saw movie or something. It's, you know, it's kind of so over the top. It's like the Roadrunner.
50, you're cutting out, but that may just be me. I don't know.
I actually heard him okay.
That's me then. I'm on the Wi-Fi at my work, so that probably has something to do with it. It's not the most reliable.
Now, did anybody watch, what was it, Another Life?
No, I haven't seen it. I don't really know anything about it either. Is that on Amazon?
Netflix. Just came out. Hold on. Make sure I got the name right. Yeah, Another Life. It's a sci-fi series that came out the day before The Boys on the 25th. And so I didn't have anything to watch, and I was waiting for The Boys to start, so I started that. It's really not bad. It's like somewhere between Arrival and I almost want to go with Lost in Space, but not a... Yeah, maybe.
Arrival, was that the Jodie Foster movie?
I don't remember who the lead character was. Arrival was that giant spaceship just kind of sat on Earth for a long period of time, and everyone just tried to figure out what it is, and it's... I don't...
I know what you're talking about. Yeah, where they were trying to teach them a new language.
Yes. Had the guy who plays Hawkeye in it.
Yeah, that was really good. I enjoyed that.
So you have that aspect of it where these aliens basically land on Earth and this giant monolith is on our planet, and we're trying to figure out what it wants or whatever, and that we find out where they're broadcasting the signal to. And so we send a spaceship out. This is like several years in the future where they have faster than light ships. And so we send a ship out to where we think the broadcast is coming from. And like one of the first episodes, one of the guys, I hope I don't spoil it. Well, it's like the first episode. So the guy does, creates a mutiny on the ship, which screws the whole ship up, so they can't communicate back with Earth, but they are still gonna go ahead with the mission, which is the whole, like I said, the whole Lost in Space aspect of things, where they're still on that mission to get to do what they're supposed to do, even though their ship can't communicate. It's constantly busted. They're trying to, you know, constantly do things like get food, make sure that, you know, they don't run out of air and everything else. So you have like both aspects of it.
Yeah, that's almost like Stargate Universe. Did you ever watch that?
No, I never did. I never got into the Stargate shows.
Oh, they're great. If you like sci-fi, I'd definitely recommend them. And there's another show that kind of did that called Dark Matter, I think, on Sci-Fi Channel.
I miss Dark Matter. That one got canceled, but I watched the I think there was, what, 3 seasons of that?
Yeah.
Yeah, that was a great show.
I think they had a choice between Dark Matter and... Okay,
that time you broke up for me, Honky.
Oh, me?
What was the other show?
You're fine just saying.
They were running along Dark Matter. At the same time,
about I don't know.
The bounty hunters.
Killjoys?
Yeah, Killjoys. I think they had the choice between Dark Matter and Killjoys. They stuck with Killjoys.
I want to say I heard the Killjoy was actually pretty good.
Yeah, it is. The first show is out there for free on on Amazon. You can pay for the rest of them, and I want to. It's just that, you know, while I've got other content out that I can watch for free, you know, when I get short of content, I'll pay for Killjoys. Otherwise, I'll, you know, wait for a while, see if it shows up on Netflix or something.
I still need to finish The Expanse. I only watched that first season.
That's a great show. That's the one I was actually trying to look up the name of it. From my understanding, I think Amazon picked that up. And I'm not sure if they did season 3 or was it 4 we're at now. But they're the ones who are going to be carrying it from now on, I believe.
Well, like I said, I don't get it free with Prime, though. Maybe if there's later seasons, I do. And, you know, maybe they'll make it free. Or if they don't make it free, you know, I'll probably pay for it and watch the seasons first.
What, The Expanse or Killjoy?
Oh, okay. I was talking about Killjoy. Yeah, The Expanse. That's one of the things I did this week. I caught up on way too much stuff this week, where I should have been doing other things. With season 4 of The Expanse coming, I realized I hadn't seen season 3, so I went to Amazon and pretty much binged season 3.
Did you say season 4 was coming?
Pretty soon, I think.
That's fantastic. Yeah, after I binged watched The Boys, I finished the last of it last night. I'm kind of at a loss as to what to start watching now. I had started... Let me see if I can find the name of it. Dark Spot? Black Spot? Something on Netflix. Black Spot. Not sure what to think of that one yet. Not a sci-fi. It seems more mystery? No, still sci-fi.
Yeah, I guess. I'd seen that. I've got it on my list to watch.
So the description of a show... Wait a second. Maybe it's just the... Okay, that's the next episode. Okay. I thought that was a description of the show. But, it definitely seems interesting.
I watched an old TV miniseries recently with Rock Hudson. I think it was made in the 80s, maybe early late 70s, called The Martian Chronicles, based on the books. You guys ever heard of that?
Oh, yeah. I watched it when it first came out.
Yeah, it was great. I mean, it's kind of limited by the TV budget, but for what it was, I think it was like 3 episodes. It was actually really good.
Yeah, my favorite episode was the one with Darren McGavin.
Oh, okay. I watched another miniseries. I think it was a BBC show originally. They did a series, I didn't know this, based on the book The Day of the Triffids. And it was actually pretty good. I think it was better than the movie adaptation they did. The book was excellent, if you guys haven't read that. It's an older sci-fi book, but it's still pretty relevant today. I mean, it definitely holds up.
Yeah, I know what the story is. I've never seen the movie all the way through, but I do. I know what you're talking about.
Yeah, the movie kind of focuses on the Triffids themselves and the horror aspect. And, you know, they want to, it's for mainstream audiences, I guess, even though it's an older movie. So it's mainly about the action and stuff like that. But the book is really good. It's mainly about what happens to society after, you know, the meteor comes down and everybody but a few people turn blind and how it breaks down. Kind of like an apocalyptic scenario. It's really good. Day of the Triffids. I recommend it.
And we've discussed this before, this series before, and I know I am the minority here, watching the sort of teen angst series. I got sort of stuck on that watching Buffy, and we talked about after Buffy there was Laura Mars, which was essentially Buffy without the vampires. Got on Hulu the other day and said Hulu exclusive or whatever it is, Hulu series, you know, Laura Mars. And I thought, okay. And then I clicked on it. It was episode one, and it was episode one from, from the old series. And I thought, well, how is that, a Hulu exclusive, old reruns? So I jumped back out and forgot about it. Then I saw a YouTube video, and there is 15 years later, they've shot a new season. Went back and looked. Yeah, there was season four, and there's only originally three seasons. So I binge watched season four, and practically every character from the original series comes back at one point, not all in the first episode, but eventually everybody who was ever on the show almost shows up. I really liked it, but without giving spoilers, I want to say it also goes really dark at the end.
What's the name of the show?
Veronica Mars. Did I say Laura Mars? That was an old movie.
Yeah, I was trying to. You said Laura Mars. I didn't really know what that was.
Yeah, I'll think of the actress. That was a movie back in the 70s that she's blind and gets an eye transplant from an executed serial killer or something like that. So she sees the serial killer coming for her. That was an old movie. Lauren Hutton, that's who was in there in that. It has nothing to do with Veronica Mars.
I'll have to put that movie on my watch list. That sounds pretty interesting.
Well, it was okay. It was not, your generic grade sort of horror movie. I mean, it wasn't like a slasher movie much or anything, or well, more thriller than a horror movie, I guess you would say. I mean, it's maybe it's Faye Dunaway, not Lord Hutton. I think Faye Dunaway, but still, It was good, not incredible.
Yeah, speaking of the teen angst movies or series, I'll do you one better. I was introduced my godson to Are You Afraid of the Dark? Do you remember that one?
That was horror show on Nick at Night, wasn't it?
Yeah, that was the Nickelodeon show. What's funny is I was so interested in it, and he had zero interest in it, that I binged the whole series after he lost interest. I watched all seven seasons.
Oh, it wasn't Nick at Night. It was, I think at that time it was called SNICK. It was Saturday Night Nick, where they had Ren and Stimpy, Are You Afraid of the Dark, I think Rugrats or something like that. But that's going back, long time ago now.
Yeah, I think it started in the early 90s, and then they brought it back in the late 90s for one or two seasons. But, I mean, it was actually pretty interesting. It wasn't scary, of course. It's for kids, but the writing was well done, and I was surprised. Yeah, if you have any kids or nieces or nephews, they may not be entertained like I was. I think it comes from a different age. And it's kind of slow and lots of mystery. There's not a lot of action and fighting and stuff, but I don't know. I think it has some merit. It's actually pretty good.
Wasn't it? Well, that was geared more towards like very, very mild horror. I was thinking about that, and I was also thinking that there was a show on around the same time called, what was it, Eerie, Indiana?
Yeah, I've heard of that one, but I haven't watched it. But yeah, Are You Afraid of Dark is a horror show for, I wouldn't say teenagers, maybe preteens.
Yeah. Now, did you find that streaming somewhere?
Yeah. Well, no, I couldn't find it streaming, but I found a DVD of the first season, and I watched that with my godson, and he was very unimpressed. So I think I found the rest on like Daily Motion or one of those. I had to kind of go to different sites to find the different seasons, and I eventually found them all and just watched it all. But I don't know if it's out on DVD or, you know, if it's, I know I had a DVD, but I think that was from when it was originally printed. I don't know if they've done any reprints or not. I think they had a movie actually not too long ago based on the series. So maybe they've reintroduced it into streaming and on physical media.
No, I think you're thinking of Goosebumps.
Yeah, you're right. That was Goosebumps.
Are You Afraid of the Dark lately? I was thinking, you know, there was a film in production. I don't know if the original cast or not.
And I know there's a movie coming up that's not out yet called, based on Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark or something like that.
Yeah, that's coming out.
Anybody heard from Joe?
No, I don't think he was on else this week either. I jumped in to talk about Kansas Linux Fest, which I'll talk about when we get on the show. And but I got in really late, but by the time I was there, at least, it was just Gorkon and Dan and Pat.
Y'all have any plans for the weekend?
Working mostly.
It's supposed to be raining here, so it'll be nice to cool off a little bit.
Now, has anyone here ever tried putting like iTunes on a Linux system?
Why would you want to?
Because my wife uses iTunes a lot, and she has a Windows 7 machine, and Windows 7 is hitting end of life, and I would like to be able to basically just get her set up with some sort of a Linux system that looks very similar to what she's used to, and install the two applications I can't get anywhere else, which is iTunes and Microsoft Office.
So we're going to go to 50% of the Windows computers aren't going to be updated anymore.
Right.
Because, I mean, if that changes in the interface, there's going to be a lot of even corporate clients not, you know, or small offices, whatever. There's going to be a lot of resistance out there to update the operating system or buy whole new computers when they got 7.
That's good for Linux.
Hopefully. Well, I always think I was going to have to jump out and reboot, but maybe not. Something was hashing like heck in the background and slowing everything down. And I killed the browser. And it didn't go away. I thought I was going to have to reboot completely, but hard drive seems to have settled down. So I'll try just kicking the browser back in, because it was getting worse, impossible to even update the show notes. You know, kept flashing. You know, ad blocker messing up your page. You want to disable it. It's okay, fine. I'll disable it on this page. Didn't do anything. And then finally I went in to, you know, the ad blocker icon, disabled it for everything. Didn't do anything. Thought, okay, well, browser window's been open too long. I'll close it and restart it. And, you know, hard drive's still hashing like heck for, you know, 3 to 4 minutes. It's good thing you guys had an interesting conversation, or I would have jumped out by now to restart the whole machine.
I'm glad you got it running right.
Well, that remains to be seen. It's like I tell my customers with Windows machines, you know, they just leave them open all night long and for weeks at a time. And it's like, you're not here. Why don't you, you know, why don't you shut the system off at night? Because it's going to run a lot better if you do.
Yeah, I shut all my stuff down.
If I don't shut it completely down, I at least put everything to sleep or hibernate. Most of my stuff is set up for wake on LAN. So, but I don't see the point of just leaving it on and a desktop up and everything all night or for days on end. My servers, they stay on all the time, but it's a little bit different.
Yeah, I was going to say my little circuit board computer servers are up all the time, but that's it.
Well, a headless machine, you don't have all this, you know, background hashing usually. Or, well, I should say not headless, but GUI-less.
Yeah, I've been really impressed lately with that little Rock Pro 64.
Okay, that Firefox is back, so far so good.
Rock Pro 64?
Yeah, I put it to new use as a security camera server, and I didn't think it would be able to handle, you know, video streaming, especially from 4 HD sources, but so far it's been great. Just kind of tuning it as I go, and I'm surprised at the performance that I can get out of, you know, a $40 computer.
Nice.
I think did I talk about Shinobi CCTV last time? I think so. Yeah, because you mentioned Node-RED as a way to interface with the security system so that my phone is on Wi-Fi. It turns off recording. I think we had that whole discussion.
Yes, I believe so.
Node-RED's awesome. I've been doing a lot with it lately. I kind of got sidetracked recently. I started programming for a little Arduino I got, but I plan on getting back to it.
So you brought up a little bit ago that most of your computers have Wacom LAN setup. And one of the things I wanted to do with Node-RED was have it interface with my Alexa so I can set up a kind of a scene where I can say, hey, like it's podcasting night or something like that, or Alexa, it's podcasting night, and then just have it turn on my LED lights down here and do Wacom LAN on this computer that I do the recording on. But I have been having a hell of a time trying to get Wacom LAN to work right.
Oh, really? Is it the laptop that you want to wake up?
No, it's a desktop machine.
And did you, because mine, the ones I have on Wacom LAN are mainly set up through the BIOS.
So as far as I know, I mean, I'll have to relook at it again, I guess. But as far as I know, I have Wacom LAN set up in the BIOS, but I think you need something also set up in the software in the operating system, or just have like a little switch or whatever set up in the operating system that just says, hey, be able to Wacom LAN. But it seems like every time I turn on whatever that little switch is in the software, you know, the operating system, I'll turn the computer off and it shuts that off, because I'll restart the thing back on and then whatever that switch is has been already turned off.
So you get it to work, but upon reboot, it stops working.
I get it to accept to show in the operating system that it should be able to Wacom LAN. But when I shut the computer down, when I try to send the magic packet or whatever to the computer to wake it up, it does absolutely nothing. And then I restart the computer manually, and when I go to check to see whether it's switch was turned on or whatever in the operating system, it shows that it's turned back off again.
Are you using something that's like a native tool? I think I use F-Tool is what I was using. That's within Ubuntu.
So it's the ETH tool?
Yeah, F-Tool, ETH tool or whatever.
Yeah. I'm trying to... I'm going back to... What the heck did I do there? I'm trying to go back to through my bash history to figure out which commands I've used. I sat down and played with it a while back, and I hammered on it for like an hour or so, and then I really haven't had a chance to put too much time on it since then. But
yeah, that's about all I can tell you. It's been so long since I set it up, but I'm pretty sure it was that combination of the BIOS and that tool.
Maybe I'm an idiot and just didn't click the right thing in the BIOS. I'll have to look. The problem is, the machine I want to do it on is the machine I do the recording on. And so I can't, like, So a lot of times on the night we do the podcast is usually the longest amount of time I actually get to sit down here. So that's when I sometimes just in the middle of podcasting, I'll work on some little stuff here and there when I'm not talking. And since that's the machine I'm recording on, I really can't fiddle with it too much.
Yeah, it's kind of a catch 22.
Okay. I finally finished updating the show notes once I got my browser back. So, you know, system's working fine again, apparently. Before we start the show, I was trying to think of everything else that I, saw this week, on Hulu last night. I watched more than I should have, stayed up too late. Watched some movies, mostly through my Showtime plug-in. So I saw, what I've been looking forward to, and I'm not sure exactly how the ending worked out or whatever. I mean, the ending was a little confusing to me, but the Man Who Shot Hitler, Then Bigfoot.
Is that the title?
Yeah, or maybe it's The Man Who Killed Hitler, Then Bigfoot. It's
got Sam Elliott, right? Guy from,
yeah, and anything with Sam Elliott in it is good.
Yeah, I love that guy. What'd you think?
I liked it. Like I said, I'm not sure how it worked out. You know, have you seen it yet?
No, I haven't seen it. It's on my watch list, but I'm kind of like you. Anything that he's in, I'll watch.
I mean, it was really good. It's kind of set through flashbacks, and eventually you kind of learn, you know, from the flashbacks, his life and all that, and some of the stuff. You know, I could have fleshed out a little bit more explanation. I mean, some of it was a one-line thing, why his life didn't go like it looked like it was, you know, going to or whatever. And I mean, if you missed the one line, or, you know, if you walked out of the room and missed the one line, then you'd be completely confused. And the ending kind of confused me how they were going to make that work. And I'm not going to say it, because probably not everybody's seen it yet, and you haven't seen it. So, you know, kind of a little on the arty side, but, as far as that kind of goes, you know, you're kind of left to draw your own conclusions on a few things. But yeah, and listen, Sam Elliott's always great.
No, I have heard it's not as ridiculous as the title makes it seem.
No, it really isn't. It's not a farce or anything. And then I watched Holmes and Watson, you know, the comedy. Oh, what's his name? And okay, it has its moments. Kind of left me wanting the 2 hours back, but, you know, I could use that for sleep, but, it's okay. It's okay. You know, I would have been mad if I'd gone to the theater and paid for it, which is what, you know, I might've done. You know, I wouldn't have gone to a theater just to watch that, but if I'd been in a theater watching something, you know, if I'm going to drive an hour to get to a theater, then, you know, there were times I was looking at what was on. Okay, well, you know, I usually watch three or four movies in a day if I'm going to drive that far. And that would have been one of the ones that I would have, you said, okay, I'll watch that since I'm here. And if I'd paid $7 to see that, I would have been mad.
I haven't seen it yet. I thought Step Brothers was funny, though. They starred together in that one. I don't know if you've seen that one.
No, I don't think I did. I've seen the ads for it and stuff. You know, I don't mind Will Ferrell usually, but you know, sometimes things are a little gets a little silly. But I mean, you know, I have seen Holmes farces that I liked better. Though, oh, the guy from House plays Mycroft, and he was really good.
I've been reading the Cryptid Works, the Sherlock Holmes, all the novels. They're all in one big book for like 3 months now. It's a huge book, but it's entertaining.
Oh, yeah. I read all the Sherlock Holmes back when I was in middle school, I think. And, yeah, when I got done, it's like, oh, man, I wish there was more.
Yeah, it's amazing how well it still holds up today, even though it was written so long ago. Like it's still very entertaining. It's exciting, and it's not really dry or boring at all.
Oh no, no. I think usually the classics always hold up. Of course, at the time, I'm sure most of your scholars would have considered it the most dreadful sort of pulp fiction.
Yeah, it's weird. You're exactly right. At the time, it probably was seen as uncouth and for the less educated. Now it's held up as one of the classics.
It'd be like Jules Verne, would have been a contemporary, and I'm sure that's the sort of thing. You know, oh, how vulgar.
Yep, I agree.
And then one I do recommend, I saw Stan and Ollie last night. That was good.
Which one was that?
Well, of course, it's about Laurel and Hardy, and mainly focuses on, I guess, you know, they tried to do a revival tour to restart their careers going through Europe, you know, and mainly they were doing that to get a movie deal and that they were working on. And the movie deal is one of those things where, you know, producer or whatever shined them on and wouldn't take their calls and eventually said, yeah, it ain't happening. Apparently, you know, it was fairly popular, but, you know, Oliver Hardy was getting, you know, kind of too old for this crap, you know, and out of shape. By the time, and you know, I guess it's not spoiler because it's historical, had a mild heart attack while they were there, you know, and everybody told him to go retire and go home, and got back up on the stage, and you know, there'd been a, you know, going through things like they'd split up, there was a falling out because Stan Laurel won more money and Hardy was just, he didn't want to rock the boat and tell and say, yeah, I'm not coming to work till we get more money. So, and that's what originally split them up back in what, the 30s or 40s. And then they were coming back in the fit. Like I said, normally I would do all this spoiler stuff, but it's historical. So you could look it up, I guess, on Wikipedia or whatever. And, you know, so it's sort of the last raw of Laurel and Hardy. It's not like going back and doing the whole history of Laurel and Hardy.
Yeah, I'm a huge fan of Laurel and Hardy. I always have been since I was a kid. I kind of shied away from this movie because I knew it was about the latter half of their career, and I was afraid it'd be too sad, stuff like that. But if you say it's pretty good, I may check it out.
It was very well acted, you know. I mean, there is some, you know, some element of pathos over it, you know, but, you know, also, you know, celebrating the friendship or whatever, and, you know, and, you know, friendship and rivalry, you know, they were, you know, so at the end they come back together, and a lot of it's, you see all, Oliver sort of coming back because, you know, more for Stan than for himself. At least that's how it's portrayed in the movie. How it actually happened, you don't know.
Yeah, if anybody's interested, every one of their shorts And I think their movies, too, are available on YouTube to watch for free.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised. I'll have to look into that.
So were they still involved with Hal Roach at that point in their careers?
No, that was the thing. I guess Stan's, when the thing, you know, when they broke up originally, Stan's contract had ended and Oliver's was still continuing. And, you know, Stan was holding out for more money. And then Oliver was like, you know, he said, well, you know, I'm under contract. You know, if I walk out with you, it's, you know, they can sue me. And that would, you know, that was sort of the conflict between them, that Stan thought that Oliver didn't have his back. And then Oliver, I guess, did one more movie without Stan, sort of had a cheap replacement for Stan. And then I think his movie career was pretty much over with that. And, you know, that was the conflict. It was like a deal where they probably didn't speak for several years until they were brought back, you know. And I think it may have been, I think a lot of one of the wives, you know, may have written a book on this based on, but, you know, not being there, you know, I think, you know, the family members who, you know, made the original material, they probably had a biased opinion. And so you don't know what actually went on. They showed them, you know, as friends who had had a falling out and got back together, you know, one of those stories like that. But, you know, what actually happened, you know, there's no unbiased inside observer to really tell you the story. I know there's one more series we didn't talk about that I'm thinking. I mean, I was going to bring one of these up, and you guys beat me to the punch with like The Boys and The Expanse and, you know, stuff that I've been binging in the last week rather than doing stuff what I ought to have been doing.
Did you watch Jessica Jones yet?
No, I started like the first episode, and it was really late. Not so much that, but I'll get, definitely that may be one of the next things I get to is watch that. That's my trouble. I tend to say, you know, I'm gonna sit down and watch the first couple episodes, and next thing I know, it's 5 a.m.
Yeah, that's easy to do.
Okay. I guess, are we ready to start the show?
Sure.
Ready when you are.
Okay. It's only like a full hour. Past the start. Netminer, are you out there? We probably put him to sleep already.
He was there earlier.
I'm here. Since none of those shows or whatnot are part of my world, I've just been sitting here waiting for the show.
Oh, I know what else I wanted to say. Doom Patrol has been renewed for a second season. So I guess, you know, at least the people at the corporate masters over DC now, but at least they're not totally insane. But, you know, I can't understand why they canceled Swamp Thing, you know, and going on with Doom Patrol, you know, cause I don't think Swamp Thing is as popular as Doom Patrol. But I haven't heard anyone criticize Swamp Thing. Everybody seems to like it.
That's awesome. I really like Doom Patrol.
And we already knew that the Orville was coming back, but it's coming back on Hulu only. doesn't really affect me because that's where I was watching it anyway. I wasn't watching it over the air. But it's not going to be on Fox anymore.
Yeah, Fox has a habit of getting rid of good shows.
Yeah, but I think Fox is still producing it. I don't know.
Well, I think Fox owns a large portion of Hulu, so.
Right, and, you know, Seth has actually, said, it's basically a streaming show. However, it has been, talked about, the ratings they publish are, just the Nielsen ratings on the over-the-air Fox broadcast. But, they've talked about, and then you take the next week, next 7 days on Hulu, and they get just as many more off of Hulu. So I guess they figure pretty much anybody who's watching has got Hulu anyway. So I hope the viewership just doesn't drop precipitously. I do know I haven't listened to it yet, but downloaded U-Random last night and looked at the show notes, and apparently at least one of the hosts was mad that, I guess they must not have any streaming service. It's going to Hulu. I won't watch it anymore. So, and I mean, it could be a fair criticism. Because everybody criticized STD.
CBS.
Everybody criticized STD because it was behind the paywall. But a lot of people said the difference is, you get CBS All Access, and essentially people get it just to watch the one show. There's other stuff on there. And I understand, I was told on this show by somebody that the new Twilight Zone's very good. And I haven't seen that. I did not renew. I haven't seen the second season of STD, and I haven't renewed the... I think I will next year when Picard comes out. We'll see. I may wait for the reviews on the first episode of Picard, but the trailer looked awesome. So I have to admit that. But I think the way CBS is rotating those shows, by that time, if I subscribe to get Picard, I may not be able to go back and watch STD and Zone.
I think Picard is going to make me go back to that old habit of torrenting again, because I have absolutely no desire to do the CBS All Access, and I kind of want to watch it. And I don't think that there's any other way that I can without doing that. So I'm not saying that I will, because I've kind of given up on that after I find that I can get stuff to watch, pretty easily, and there's enough streaming services that I already subscribed to that I can get enough content that I don't need to torrent anymore, and I haven't done it in ages. But when it comes to, I love what's the Seth MacFarlane show there? Why am I blanking on it? The name.
Orville?
That's it. Thank you. Late at night. Mind fading. When it comes to the Orville, I think one of the things that they had pointed out on the U-Random podcast was the fact that I think a lot of people are just going to think that because the show isn't on regular television anymore, that it just got canceled and went away. They're not going to realize that it's on Hulu exclusively. And I think it's a bad move to make, because I think that's what's going to happen. I mean, a lot of people are just going to go, hey, it's gone. I don't see it on anymore. How come it's not on anymore? And then just go, well, it must have gotten canceled. And then the show's just going to die.
Well, I mean, yeah, there, not everybody's an enthusiast who, you know, looks at maybe related things on YouTube and finds this out, you know, but I don't know. I would think that the average Orville watcher is plugged in enough to know. I mean, there may be a few casual watchers, you know, probably old people my age in their 50s or 60s or whatever, but just turn on the TV. I mean, you know, I almost never watch anything over the air. A lot of that is I need to get an antenna up higher so I can get all the channels that are available. But there's stuff that's, you know, there's that channel that does all the West, MeTV does all the Western reruns and stuff. But it's just, with the streaming services, I don't like, you got to be in the chair at this time, you know, every day or the, you know, to watch it, you know, it's worth it to me for the streaming that, you know, I can watch it anytime. And the other thing, and not to be critical, and I mean, I'm not going to say I've never torrented stuff, because the first couple seasons of The Expanse, you know, well, I literally can't get Sci-Fi Channel where I am, you know, not being on cable. I think they're missing a bet, because, you know, Showtime and HBO and all these things are going to cable, and, you know, Sci-Fi has got enough content. If they wanted to have a separate subscription service, and I hate to be nickeled and dimed to death, you know, like you add everything together and it's like paying for cable, but, you know, I'm thinking eventually, you know, there's going to be one big package and everybody joins in, whether it's Hulu or Netflix or whatever. But, Sci-Fi's got enough content behind a pay, you know, that I would if they came up with their own, streaming service, I would probably go with it. I hate to be nickeled and dimed to death. Like I said, I go with DC, you know, I don't complain about DC, where I would, about CBS All Access, because there's one show, you know, and that may be on CBS All Access that I would watch, and it's one that makes me mad every time I watch it. If they had more content that I would watch, and like I said, with Picard coming up, there probably will be that. Yeah. I'll probably pay for that next year. With DC, you know, I've subscribed to DC, and I guess what I was getting at is, you know, if everybody, you know, if I can pay for something to get the content, I probably will, because, you know, if everybody torrents everything, then the shows aren't going to survive. Yeah, you may get it for free, but then the next season the show won't be, because everybody was torrenting it rather than paying for the service. And
I kind of disagree. I think there's that guy from Valve, Dave Newell, the guy that owns, or that, you know, started Valve and Steam. He made the comment that it's not so much a piracy problem as it is a content delivery problem. And when Steam got up and running, you know, the game network, for delivering games, then piracy dropped way, way down. So I think he had a point. And I think we're heading to that point now, to where the content delivery system is so splintered, like you said, everybody jumping in the game to offer their own service, they were going to start heading back towards, you know, the whole piracy versus content delivery problem. And I think piracy is going to be on the upswing. I think, like you said, if they could combine all the services into something that's easy to afford, instead of having a separate bill for every show you want to watch, I think that would work out a lot better.
Well, like, you know, there's enough stuff on, in my opinion, a lot of people, you know, thinking, yeah, DC, I'm not gonna pay for that. But it is usually one show at a time, though. Right now, you know, there's well, I guess there's not Swamp Thing because today was the last episode. Is it Stargirl or Titans coming back next? I think it's Titans. But, you know, it's at least there's always a show every week. And, of course, right now we also have Young Justice outside. Exactly. And I guess the new when that's done, I think the new animated Harley Quinn show is coming on. So, you know, be a couple things a week, and then, you know, that the animated movies, which are usually better. Well, in the DCU, the animated movies are a lot better than the live action. So, you know, I'm getting Batman Hush about a week after it comes out on Redbox.
What did you think of Hush?
Oh, I haven't seen it. Well, I can't say I haven't seen it. Somebody's getting it. I don't know if it's out on DVD or whatever. I can't help myself. I go on Hulu and there's all kinds of clips. I mean, I must have watched 20 clips of Hush from, off. Did I say Hulu? YouTube. Off of YouTube, and, you know, the last scene in the movie's there, so I know how the movie ends. And I'm not usually someone who's terribly broken up over spoilers, but I'm pretty sure when I watch the movie, I'm going to have already seen about half or a third of it.
Just one quick note about the whole Orville going to Hulu thing. There's a chance I have a Hulu subscription, but there's a possibility I might drop it because Hulu doesn't offer you the ability to download an episode and be able to watch it offline. And I work in a place that has like zero connectivity whatsoever. And the way I've been consuming most of my content is I'll download like an episode a day of some show and I'll watch it during my lunch. And if I can't do that, then it makes it very difficult for me to be able to watch things.
Yeah, and of course, Netflix lets you download a lot of their content now. So they may have been thinking the same thing. However, I'm certain somebody in the audience is screaming that, you know, they have this application and you just, you know, you stream it while you're asleep and it rips it.
Well, like a YouTube DL type thing?
Well, there must be something. I mean, it, as long as something is... you know, I don't know if a lot of the streaming stuff has DLC or whatever, but, you know, I would think if you could get
it. If it plays on your screen, you can record it.
Exactly. May not be the best quality, but you could definitely do it, I think. Especially if whatever media you're taking into work with you. And, glad to see you join us, Joe.
Yeah, I probably won't be on real long. I'm visiting my grandma.
Okay, we were wondering about that. I was telling them I jumped into Tilts. Yeah, at the end last week, and I don't know if you weren't ever there or you were already gone.
I was driving at the time.
Okay. Okay, well, glad to hear from you because we would have got worried.
Yeah, I had posted on the Tilts MeWe chat room that I wasn't going to be able to make it.
And And my mail's coming up. Did get a nice feedback from one of your compatriots at Mintcast last night, and terribly belatedly because, yes, it was Bo, Monday I looked at the website for Kansas Linux Fest, and we'll talk about that when we actually start the show, because we're an hour and a half late. Said and told myself, oh crap, that's in 2 weeks. And I said crap three times now during the show. Sorry for being not family friendly. But made hotel reservations, and then contacted them, and because they didn't have the schedule up yet then, they do now on the website, and said, yeah, kind of part of the reason I contacted you guys, wanted to make sure something hadn't happened. I didn't want to send out notices to all these different podcasts to mention the show. Or mention the fest, and then find out something falling through, and there wasn't going to be anything. So I, after my initial contact, it says, part of the reason I contacted you guys to make sure, there was still something going on. But they got the schedule up last night. Bo wrote me back and said, sorry, man, we're next show is going to be that weekend while it's going on. And I said, well, that's cool. It's because, if I'd been on top of my game, I would have got stuff out a week or two earlier.
Well, we're running a split show for a while, testing it out, and either Leo or Bo will record something and add to what we're posting on Tuesday.
Oh, okay, that's cool. And I said something on the you random matter most, and it's like, man, we dropped last night. Sorry. I told him, no, it's okay. It's not your fault. It's my fault. I should have been out there at least a week earlier, I'll talk about that. But if anybody didn't know, and was interested in coming, well, it's probably too late. Airfare would probably be prohibitive now. But I'm hoping to reach some of the people in driving distance who hadn't heard that it was on. And I'll talk about that more, because my initial, sending out of notices, that got amplified by Phil from Sunday Morning Linux Review. He pretty much sent out his own notice, to podcasts I hadn't known about or thought of. If anybody out there is tired of hearing about Kansas Linux Fest, you can blame me.
Certainly not tired of hearing about it. But Joe, can you do me a favor? Can you explain to me what it is that the Mintcast is doing now with their schedule?
Well, we're still recording once every 2 weeks on Sunday, and it's still live. And so that's not this weekend, it's the following weekend. But we're taking our exceedingly long show, which is averaging an hour 45 to 2 hours, splitting it into two and releasing it twice.
See, I'm going to blame myself for not trying to get a hold of you earlier. I don't want to discourage what you're doing, but I think that's a horrible idea. If people think that the show is too long, they can break it up themselves. I mean, if you guys are going to split it, like one show being just the wanderings and the news, and then have the next show be the dive in, they can just stop it right there if they think it's too long. I just I also don't understand people complaining about a podcast being too long. Then again, this show can run anywhere between, I mean, we have probably at least an hour of just us rambling about television shows right now, and then at the final show usually winds up being about 3 hours sometimes, but those are the shows I usually like because those are the people, you know, I want to hear these people for a long period of time. I don't understand people wanting half hour, 45 minutes, whatever. Sorry. My own two cents.
Oh, no worries. I mostly agree with you. I mean, it's not a big deal that we are cut in half as far as I'm concerned, but it seems like a lot of extra work for what people can do on their own.
Right. And does anyone ever offer up any explanation as to why they think it's too long or what podcasts they're listening to that are short? I mean, there's occasional HBRs that run short, but even those, I'm usually, you know, if I can start a podcast and it ends before I make it to work, I'm kind of a little upset.
Right, right. Well, evidently, most people's commute to work is between 30 and 45 minutes, and they want to be able to listen to a podcast and finish it on the car ride.
Well, I will admit I have in the past. And not in a while, because I've usually replaced it with a streaming news service, and that's why I'm way behind on HBR. But a lot of my H consumption was, you know, when I'm shaving and in the shower. That's probably way too much information. But a lot of the HBRs are just about that right length.
But if it's people you like listening to, then, you know, I want to try to hear more of them. Like, we're talking about the You Random Podcast. The You Random Podcast comes out once a month, and, like, this one was about maybe 2 hours long. I downloaded it yesterday? Yeah, it dropped yesterday for some reason. But I downloaded it yesterday, and I'm almost done with it. And I'm disappointed that it's almost done. Granted, I listen to a lot less podcasts than I used to. I'm pretty much just, I'm down to things I find interesting on HBR, Mintcast, You Random, Tilts. I have other ones in my feed, but I don't necessarily download them as often.
Man, you must get tired of listening to me.
Yeah, I have to admit, I really have to admit, listening to You Random and then I hear one of them say, "Is this the end?" And I'm like, no!
Right.
Going back to Honky's point, that was kind of why I quit listening to Android App Addicts, was because they decided to split the show. And I think, I don't know if they still do it that way, but they split it up into daily episodes instead of having one long episode each week. And it was very annoying.
Yeah, they've gone back to a longer format a long time ago.
I'll have to start listening again. But you remember when they first did that? I think they were trying to monetize it better or something like that. And it was terrible.
I'm not sure if it was a monetary thing or if it was just a scheduling conflict thing.
Well, they recorded the whole thing. And then they would split that show up into segments for each daily so they could have a daily podcast.
And I want to go on record here because I think he's probably listening. Door and Posse, I really miss seeing you guys at Fest. I hope we bump into each other again.
Yeah, by the way, that was no offense against Door. It's just, I mean, I still enjoyed listening to him, but it was much less enjoyable when they had split it up into tiny shows like that.
No. I wasn't criticizing Door either. I mean, you know, I preferred the long format rather than a bunch of little ones myself.
Yeah, I listen to all my podcasts at like 2.8 or 3x. So the length of it doesn't bother me. And being able to pause and pick it up right where I left off is, you know, a pretty stock feature.
You know, and I am way, way behind. Probably never catch up to where I used to be because, you know, I used to spend a lot more time outside and on the tractor and all that. And, you know, since I started taking care of my dad, of course, you know, past four years ago now. Oh, man. I should know exactly. But, you know, it got where I could do one or the other and, you know, put the farming off on, you know, sharecropping out. So I don't have that much time, you know, just for audio format where, you know, where I'm not outside. If I'm inside, then I'm, you know, there's way too much video format to go to. So I did not have as much time for podcasts and for audiobooks or whatever as I used to do, and I miss that.
Make time.
Oh, one thing I wanted to bring up for the show while we're all together. I was really impressed, when I went to the Mintcast website and, you know, I clicked on like Joe's biography, which is extensive, and I learned a lot of things about Joe I didn't know. You know, I'm thinking, Honky, maybe we ought to have a similar section on the website where everybody can write their history or whatever and put it on there.
Like a bio page?
Exactly.
I'll see what I can do.
Okay, great. You know, I just wanted to throw that out there that, you know, that might be a cool thing. Okay.
Joe, we didn't catch any of that.
Joe, do you hear us? Apparently not. Joe is dropped off and I assume rejoining. Minix, I guess you're having trouble too?
Yeah, I was trying to. I'm at work, so I'm using Plumble on my phone, but I forgot that you can't connect with the same, you know, with the same alias to your laptop and another client at the same time. So I think I'll have to do it because I wanted to see the links people post in the Mumble. Now I'll have to do it like Joe does, where he does two connections or he makes two aliases. But I'm back now.
Yeah, it must be. I don't think I'm quite the same name on my Plumble that I am in Mumble, but still, you know, like if it's not this show, usually else I start listening to it, you know, if I'm away from home on the phone, and as soon as I get home, you know, if I connect through Mumble on the desktop, it automatically drops me off on Plumble. And so it's a, you know, kind of a nice feature, I guess. You know, I'm not sure how it does it.
Okay, let me see if this works. All right, I got it to work.
Okay, I'll be right back. I am, since I haven't done it in a while, I will volunteer to be host. Okay, I guess we'll assume Joe's not coming right back, if at all. So are we ready to start?
Ready when you are.
Sure.
All right.
SMLR 2.0 is the revamped Sunday Morning Linux Review with Tony Bemis, Mary Tomich, and Tom Lawrence. On even episodes, we cover distro fever and tech news. On the odd episodes will be fresh looks where we review a distro or software or tips and tricks. Live recordings are bi-weekly. Sunday morning on both Google Hangouts On Air and audio only stream. Visit smlr.us for all the shows and the live recording schedule.
Oh my God, it's Hacker Public Radio. Hacker Public Radio is a daily podcast by the hacker community for the hacker community. If you're interested in technology, creative thinking, hacking, Linux, or any kind of computer, that kind of stuff, you should listen to Hacker Public Radio at hackerpublicradio.com.
The Linux Link Tech Show. Tune in to the world's longest-running Linux podcast live every Wednesday, 8:30 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time. Find us on the web at www.twlts.org or email us at techshow@thelinuxlink.net. IRC server, thelinuxlink.net/techshow. Join Pat, Alan, Link, and Joel. And don't forget the two Dans. They are so hot. I know, because I've kissed them both. And Flying Rich, he's a bloody drunko.
If you don't like a guest, you can stick it up your ass. Ain't no funny duddies that'll link it back.